In other news, footage from the moment the King was heckled during a visit to Lichfield Cathedral yesterday.
How long have you known about Andrew and Epstein? Have you asked the police to cover up for Andrew? What do you think should be allowed to say to lawyers in the House of Commons?
You'll hear from the heckler later in the show, plus the NHS to offer same-day prostate cancer test, and... This as the government launches, says it will launch an inquiry into how many motorists are being dazzled by headlights as the darker evenings arrive. Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, ministers are planning to use barracks in Inverness and East Sussex to house hundreds of asylum seekers. The use of asylum hotels was branded failed, chaotic and expensive in a report published yesterday. LBC's Fraser Knight has more.
The government had promised to end the use of hotels to house asylum seekers by 2029, but reports this morning suggest that privately, Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, has tasked the Home Office with actually ending their use within a year. And so we're back to this idea of expanding the use of military sites and porta cabins, with the Times newspaper saying that two of them will be ready to move hundreds of men into by the end of next month.
Hurricane Melissa is expected to bring life-threatening conditions to Jamaica this morning. It's been upgraded to a rare Category 5 storm with winds of 175 miles per hour and extreme rain. The storm's already been blamed for 3 deaths. Men in England with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis from the NHS within a day. Artificial intelligence will be used to interpret MRI scans as part of a trial at up to 15 hospitals. President Trump signed a rare earths and minerals deal on his trip to Japan. He held talks with the new Prime Minister, Sane Takeuchi, talking up a golden age for their alliance.
Anytime you have any question, any doubt, anything you want, any favors you need, anything I can do to help Japan, we will be there. We are an ally at the strongest level.
The White House says Tokyo will also nominate Mr. Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. Eastern Airways has suspended operations and all of its flights have been cancelled. The domestic airline, which operates services across the UK, Ireland and Europe, is set to appoint administrators. It puts hundreds of jobs at risk. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 96.53 after closing up 8 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 14. LBC weather mostly dry with sunny spells across much of England, showers in Scotland, Northern Ireland and parts of Northern England, a high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Claire worked in the marketing department for an up-and-coming artisan bakery. Unfortunately, the artisan bakery in question was so up-and-coming, nobody actually knew it existed. But then she had the really good idea to use Canva to create a business plan. It looked good. Really, really good. Their investors thought so too. And now their hotcakes are selling like, well, exactly.
Thanks, Canva.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after seven on Tuesday, October the 28th. Nigel Farage defends the Reform MP against racism accusations over TV advert remarks and seeks to divert attention to East London and a demonstration there on the weekend, which, I have to concede at least, went largely, if not wholly, unreported by mainstream media. We'll give you full details on that. As you heard on the LBC News Bulletin, major concern, Hurricane Melissa on its way to Jamaica. Here's Jamaican Government Minister Daryl Vaz speaking about the difficulties of getting people to comply with safety warnings.
We have been in preparation to await the landfall for 4 or 5 days now, so people become even more sceptical as to whether or not this is a reality that's going to hit.
Again from the LBC News Bulletin, men with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis on the NHS within a day. Assistant Director of Health Improvement at Prostate Cancer UK, Amy Rylance, told me earlier this month
12,000 men die from prostate cancer every year. It's the second biggest cancer killer in men. So for a lot of men, it is a very serious, very aggressive disease.
Hopefully, by now, you'll know that the clocks went back on the weekend. This, as 4 in 5 drivers report worries and concerns about dazzling headlights in the darker evenings. We'll give you full details on that. And big business for Britain.
I'm proud that British Typhoons will form a vital part of the Turkish Air Force for many years to come as you defend NATO's southeastern flank for the good of all of us.
That's Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer hailing the deal to sell the Typhoons to Turkey.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Hang on a second. The Prime Minister just called it the Turkish Air Force. 2 weeks ago, we were calling it Turkiya. Is it not the Turkish Air Force, then? Or is it allowed to be the Turkish Air Force? But it can't be Turkey, it has to be Turkiya. Don't you get yourself in a muddle when you go down that ill-advised route. That's for later in the show. As I said just moments ago, Nigel Farage defending remarks made by a Reform MP who said seeing adverts full of black and Asian people, quotes, drives her mad, close quotes. Ms. Farage arguing the intention behind her comments was not racist. You remember we discussed this at length yesterday. He also sought to point attention, probably justifiably, to East London. He described as a foreign invading army. A march that took place in Tower Hamlets on Saturday as, quotes, one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen in my life. And I have to concede, at least, there's been very little coverage by mainstream media. LBC's Shivani Sharma reports on both issues and joins us from Tower Hamlets. Shivani, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. The Reform MP Sarah Poaching caused quite the stir at the weekend when she said it drives her mad when she sees adverts full of black and Asian people. Now, there have been calls for her to step down as an MP or face some sort of repercussions, including from the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer.
It's shocking racism. And it's the sort of thing that will tear our country apart. And it tells you everything about Reform. And Nigel Farage has got some questions to answer, because either he doesn't consider it racist, which in my view is shocking in itself, or he does think it's racist and he's shown absolutely no leadership.
Now, despite that backlash, Sarah Poaching's party leader, Nigel Farage, stopped short of calling her comments racist yesterday during a press conference.
The remarks were ugly, clumsy, put in a way that if you take them literally as they are on their own, you can put the worst of all interpretations on it. I understand the context in which she said it. I don't like the way in which she did it. I am very unhappy with her indeed.
But Farage was unequivocal in where he believes the real racism was at the weekend.
There was proper racism happening in Tower Hamlets over the weekend. Outright intimidation to the point of sort of basically urging the mass wipeout of huge numbers of Jewish people. I thought the scenes of those men, in many cases masks on, women brushed aside, not welcome to be any part of it. It's one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen in my whole life. A foreign invading army marching through our streets.
Now, Palestinian flags are still tied to the top of lampposts here in Tower Hamlets, left over from Saturday. And it was UKIP protesters who initially planned to come here to protest to reclaim Whitechapel from the Islamists, as they put it. But it was banned by the police, who were worried about a realistic prospect of serious disorder if they came to protest here, an area where 40% of the local population is Muslim. But despite that ban, thousands of anti-racism counter-protesters still took to the streets here, many of whom were with the group Stand Up to Racism, men and women protesting peacefully. But there were also clear videos and images which show there were a number of masked men, all dressed in black, chanting Allah Akbar, chanting Zionist scum off our streets, setting off flares, reportedly selling balaclavas for £5 so others could avoid being identified. And in one interaction, Nick, after some inaudible comment, one of the masked men seems to suggest to an anti-racism campaigner that they weren't protesting on the same side, despite this being dubbed as a unity march.
Yes, need for that. We're on the safe side, bro.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are, bro.
No.
Now, responding to this incident, a spokesperson for the Prime Minister has said where there is evidence of anti-Semitism, the police should tackle it as a matter of urgency.
Charlie Sharma reporting. You'll hear from Reform UK MP Danny Kruger in a moment, but let's turn first to someone who knows far more about that part of London than I do. Ajmal Masroor is an imam and broadcaster and stood as an independent candidate in the last election for the constituency that encompasses Tower Hamlets. Thank you very much for coming on, Mr. Masroor. How surprised were you by the events that we're now reporting from the weekend? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, firstly, Sarah Putin's comments are very racist, very triggering for me because I grew up in the East End of London in 70s and 80s and I've got bottle and glass mark on my face that had been left behind by the thugs of racism, bleeding when I was a child, being beaten up on the street. So when she speaks like that, it really hurts. When she says black and Asian people make her, which was the exact word, that she gets very
drives her mad.
Yeah, drives her mad.
Yes, no one would seek to defend them. My question was actually, were you surprised by the events on the weekend? If we could move to that, Mr. Masroor.
I'm coming to that. So just condemning that first and saying we should never have any space for that, number one. Number two, in East End of London, I was there. And it reminded me of Oswald Mosley's march, Battle of Cable Street, when they were trying to march, attacking the Jews. When Jews, trade unionists and locals came together and defended themselves. I think the people of Tower Hamlets did exactly the same thing. I was there from 11:30 until 1:30.
In what way were the local people being attacked?
So when UKIP decided or announced that they're coming for the march, last time when they did, there was a lot of disorder. There was a lot of fighting, skirmishes between the protesters and the police, as well as those who were standing to defend their own area. Imagine if somebody came and said to a Jewish-dominated area such as Stamford Hill and started chanting anti-Semitic slogan, we would all stand together in defending the Jewish community saying no.
But it's interesting you would mention anti-Semitic slogans because they were chanting, I'm sure you weren't one, Zionist scum off our streets. What do you take to mean by that?
You know, we were chanting, whose street, our street.
No, well, there was also
whose town,
chants,
yes, our town. There were also, I don't know that. Well, like, I didn't hear it.
No, but what do you take from the chanting, Zionist scum off our streets? What do you take from that?
If anybody has a slogan or says or does anything that breaks the law, I say to the police, arrest them. In fact, you know what? Mayor of Tower Hamlets did say that. He has asked the bar commander to keep a strong eye on
Why do you imagine a community leader was selling £5 balaclavas, no face, no case, unless that in some way intimated law-breaking?
Who is the community leader you're talking about?
This is someone who I think identifies himself as Big Fish.
Look, anybody could claim anything. You know what? I'm travelling on the underground. I see.
So you don't recognise that. You don't recognise chances.
I was there for
street.
Two and a half. I was there for 3 hours, Nick, and okay. I did not see.
Did you hear the chant, we are coming on a crusade, we need to take back our streets? Did you hear that chant?
No.
Right. I don't know if there's much point continuing them, because I was going to ask you to take them back from whom, but you didn't know about that. So
I
wanted to get a picture of what happened there, but everything that I'm putting to you from the news reports, you didn't know. So I don't know that we can go any further.
I was there at the forefront of the march.
So were the journalists.
No, but what I'm saying is...
I don't expect you to know what everybody said, I wonder if you would discuss the sentiment. We need to take back our streets, Mr. Masroor. From whom?
From the racist. From the thugs who are coming to attack or threatening to attack the stability. Look, there were Jews, Christians and Muslims, rabbis, priests, as well as imams, people of ordinary background, people of taxi drivers to office workers. We were all together there. Yes, more than 60% of the participants were white.
Did you see the events on the stage?
Yes, of course, I was there.
Did you not see a man holding a large Bangladeshi flag wearing a mask? You didn't see him?
I didn't see a Bangladeshi flag anywhere. I saw Palestinian flag, yes.
Okay.
I saw British flag, yes. Okay. And I also
saw no Palestinian flags either.
I just said I did.
Oh, you did. I see, but you didn't see. You saw no Bangladeshi flags whatsoever.
I didn't. Well, I can't remember seeing it, but vividly I remember seeing British flag. Vividly I remember seeing Palestinian flag, and I remember how right next to me there was a disabled lady sitting on a wheelchair, which said Jews against occupation and genocide. I was very touched by the solidarity of people from all backgrounds. Ultimately, Nick, this is against racism, and we should stand against racism at all costs.
Totally agree, and I'm very sorry you endured what you did in your younger life. Ajmal Masroor, thank you for your time. You're an imam based in London. You were at the events yesterday, 7:14. We'll go a minute late to the news, because let's bring into the conversation Danny Kruger, who is a former UK MP for East Wiltshire, and of course defected from the Conservatives last month. I've got to start with a quick word on your view of what your party colleague said about adverts on TV. Where do you stand on that, Mr. Kruger?
Well, I strongly regret what Sarah said. Clearly, that was the totally wrong thing to say. As Nigel Farage has clarified, and Sarah herself, you know, she meant something completely different. That's no excuse. What she said was wrong, and it's right that she's withdrawn it.
Can I take you to events in East London and Tower Hamlets on the weekend? Your interpretation of what you've heard from Nigel Farage, possibly what you've heard from my other interviewee, and what you might have read in the media, Mr. Kruger?
Well, the fact is we have a divided society, and what we saw in Tower Hamlets at the weekend is really troubling. Yes, of course, there are many people claiming that there's unity among all of these different groups, that what seems to unite them is a hatred of Israel. But no doubt there most people there were peaceful, at least in practice on the day. But you also had a very large number of people, the video evidence shows that clearly, militarized gang of thugs, of young men, all wearing black, all masked up, looking extremely intimidating with a clearly anti-Semitic intent. That is the real story of the weekend. And the fact that the Prime Minister isn't giving attention to that, the government seems to be entirely indifferent to that, as they are to these regular anti-Semitic protests that we see in our streets.
Mr. Kruger, would you describe it as a foreign invading army?
Well, it looks like an army. I mean, clearly the intention is to look as threatening and military as possible.
Indeed. So I think it's foreign?
Well, we don't know where everybody who's there come from, but they're...
Well, they're saying they're locals, of course.
Well, I mean, isn't that concerning? Isn't that concerning that local people in London should identify with the Palestinian cause more than the British cause? I think that is very worrying. And what they all seem to do, and I'm afraid you just heard it from your previous guest talking about standing against genocide, that is code for a determination to eradicate Israel. I mean, to say that the whole state of Israel is genocidal and therefore illegitimate. So I'm very worried that people should have these sorts of allegiances and feel free to march in London with impunity.
Lastly, Mr. Kruger, you know how LBC works. We were talking a lot yesterday, me and my colleagues, about the comments made by Sarah Poachin, and many listeners say, oh, that's what Reform is. They're just a bunch of racists. I know you. I know you're not a racist. But how is your party to shed that tag, Mr. Kruger?
Well, that's why I regret this, you know, massive slip of the tongue that Sarah made yesterday, because clearly it would be deeply offensive to many people, and it will confirm that prejudice that they have against us. So we have to do more to dispel it. I think the great opportunity we have, though, is to show that we are genuinely the national party of change. We have an analysis of what's wrong with this country that should appeal to people across the United Kingdom and from all different backgrounds. And I desperately want us to appeal properly to those immigrant communities who have exactly the same concern. They want to get their country back from the madness and the dysfunction that the last two governments have plunged us into. So Reform has got to appeal to everybody, and that's my commitment.
Must leave it there for time reasons. Danny Kruger from Reform, thank you. It's 7:17 LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
About 900 asylum seekers are to be moved to military sites as part of efforts to close migrant hotels. Hurricane Melissa is set to hit Jamaica with winds of 175 miles per hour. And Donald Trump's held talks with Japan's new Prime Minister, Sane Takaichi, in Tokyo. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells across much of England, showers further north, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25. This is on the Essex stretch. Anti-clockwise from junction 29 at the A127 to just before the M11. It's after an accident that happened. One lane is still closed for the final bit of recovery. Long delays still on the M1, though. Northbound up to junction 11A at Dunstable. Just after the junction, a lorry has hit a bridge and only one lane is open. Also, queues on the A2 westbound up to Cobham, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. In Boreham Wood, Elstree Way is closed eastbound at Manor Way, and that's where a lorry's broken down. And on the Underground, there are severe delays on the Jubilee and Victoria lines.
This is LBC.
Stayshore. What is Stayshore? Stayshore is not just the UK's favourite travel insurance. StaySure is the confidence that comes with knowing that you're covered by the company with more five-star reviews on Trustpilot than any other provider. A company that welcomes people of all ages with pre-existing medical conditions for single or multiple trips. So stay sure with StaySure Travel Insurance. UK's favourite relates to number of five-star Trustpilot reviews, T's and C's and verifications at staysure.co.uk/reviews.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
You just get it right, the customer service, the sort of communication. You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it. And the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
A Southern Train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
7:21. Let's get our skates on. Running a little bit behind time after those extended interviews. Quickly through a couple of the front pages. Well, the Daily Mail goes with the story that's based on the interview that you heard on this radio station almost 24 hours ago when I spoke with the Housing Secretary, Steve Reid, and the fact that he refused four times to tell me that there won't be a mansion tax or even whether he would supported the idea is the front page. As Housing Secretary refuses four times to rule out new socialist levy and budget, says the Daily Mail. Threat of a mansion tax sparks house market havoc. I'm afraid partly responsible. Well, I'm not responsible, but responsible by the minister who refused to answer a question. The grooming gang story is the front page of the Daily Express. Grooming gang probe rigged from the start. Strong testimony there. And the other story that we're going to look at actually a little bit later than this hour, the Daily Telegraph. NHS to offer same-day prostate cancer test. The LBC app is telling you about asylum seekers to be moved to barracks and pop-up cabins to try and end that hotel use. And lastly, let's go at one at random from the websites. Here we go. And it's Sky News getting ready for the arrival. And we're also looking at this, actually. Hurricane Melissa in Jamaica. They're telling you, the TV channel telling you about that. OK, who phoned first? John in Croydon. John, where do you want to go first? I think we've probably had our conversation about Sarah Poaching. Shall we look at East London? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'll just relate this back to a guest you had on yesterday, but I'll start with the guest you've had on today. I understand that in any large congregation, there are always going to be a small minority who exhibit habits, traits and opinions that are not reflective of the larger majority. Mm-hmm. Had he have said that and then said, if the people displayed such signs of anti-Semitism and so on, the full force of the law and so on and so forth, but to completely deny that he ever saw it take place,
We don't know, John, but we don't know what that man saw, so we don't know, do we, in reality?
Okay, well, let's give him the benefit of the doubt, but I see it highly unlikely that that being the case. And then, even then, when he is confronted with the evidence, he sort of goes on, oh, this could be anything, this could be anyone, rather than trying to address it. So I don't think he's trying to take any accountability or responsibility for that, which as a community leader, I don't think reflects very well on him. Let's just put it that way, Nick. And I think that's a fair comment, and I can leave it at that.
No, I think you are. And is it a, quote, well, foreign invading army, as you see it? Those are quite charged words used by Mr. Farage.
Well, when you look at that in terms of your Danny Kruger was just saying in terms of about having those words shouted and that sentiment shared, and because of the lack of identity that you can see, being with the masks and so on, it's hard to identify any British tributes or British traits within that. to actually identify as anything less than foreign, even if it's not foreign in terms of, I'm talking about foreign in terms of culture as opposed to be where you've actually been born or so on. Like that is something that's not native to our shores. But also to the guest that you had on yesterday, Miranda Kerr, who is often trying to bait the situation.
Okay, well, they're not here to defend themselves. So do you think it's awfully rude? I'm going to thank you very much for your very cogent remarks that you made at the top. I won't say, because they're not, as I say, they're not here to defend themselves, and I'd like to move on. But John, thank you for getting us started. Have yourself a good day. Thanks for the point you make. I think I'm virtually on the same page with you on all of them. Chris in Richmond. Chris, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Well, it's same old, isn't it, from Nigel Farage? You know, using, say, what Sarah Pochin said was ugly. No.
But let's move on from Sarah Pochin. Is it a
foreign
foreign invading army that we saw in East London?
No, it wasn't, and the language is inappropriate. People are like, yes, you may not like the protest style, and that's fine. We can, there's been some not great behaviour in terms of the Palestine protests. We can all align on that, but the language is really important here. And let's not move on from Sarah Pochin. This is a standing member of Parliament complaining about the colour of people's skin. My MP, no, is brown Asian. She wasn't. She has got, I believe, a heritage from parts of Africa. She is a fantastic MP. I couldn't give a monkey.
We've heard all this yesterday. It is how we've moved on. Everything has been said on this radio station about Sarah Pochin. I do want to focus on what Mr. Farage describes as a foreign invading army for today, if we can. And you would say, Chris, that he's totally wrong on that as well. Because is it an army? Well, it represents an army. Have you seen the video?
I've seen a bit of the video. It's not an army. An army is what...
Well, my problem is foreign. I don't think they're... What makes him say they're foreign? I don't know why...
That's my issues.
Yeah.
Well, it's utter, this is a guy that wants to run this country, right? We need to bring people together. Nigel Farage, all he does is stoke division and stoke problems. He doesn't create any solutions to things, and he doesn't find ways to bring people together. That is what you need to do to bring people together. Just like Boris's ridiculous comments about, you know, Muslim women looking like letterboxes. It's just rhetoric to try and whip up his base. Just like Trump, it is not going to help solve anything to do with the small boat crisis.
Chris, thank you for your views on that. We have spoken a lot about Sarah Pochin. I don't see there's a lot left to say, but the events in East London, which I have to also, as I've said before, accept, were not widely reported. That, to me, is the live issue. And let's come back to that aspect and see what you make of that in a moment. 7:26 now to the story that men with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis on the NHS within a day under game-changing, as it's called, new trials. The Rapid Diagnosis Service uses AI to interpret MRI scans in seconds. Goodness me. Professor Pat Price is a clinical oncologist and co-founder of the Catch Up with Cancer campaign and joins me now. Well, for the newspapers, it's, what did I just say? A game changer. Would you concur, Professor? Good morning.
Morning. It's a technology breakthrough and it will solve one problem. Remembering there's lots of problems. So for men, hopefully they'll, evidence-based, they'll get this high-risk screening in. But when men have their PSA tests, then they have to go and see, have they got cancer or not?
Mm.
Part of that is having an MRI scan, right? This will go through the scanner. And obviously that has to be read by the radiologist. Now, great. Just like with mammograms now, they've got AI that instead of the radiologist can look at it and say yes or no. And that, if it works, I'm sure it will, because great technology may be more accurate, it will be faster, and that'll be great, may avoid biopsies. So if this trial works out, that will be one step that will be so much faster. And so men won't be thinking, oh, I've got to go for my scan, would it be positive? They'll know. So that's great. But the problem is, of course, once you've been diagnosed, if it is positive, you have to have treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, you either have radiotherapy or surgery. Radiotherapy, some places of the country, there's 9 months waiting list for your treatment.
Goodness.
So, yes. And an AI, proven value in radiotherapy. The radiotherapy community were given £15 million to introduce AI, which cut down the time. 6 months later, it was withdrawn. So, good news, but the trial's got to be done, then the money has to be given and kept, and then all the other bottlenecks have to be sorted. But I don't want to put a negative on it. This is great. This technology is really, really good.
The trials are going to be run across 15 hospitals, Yorkshire, Manchester, the southwest, and east of England. What is the metrics by which they'll be judged, Professor?
They'll be how well they diagnose the tumours versus the radiologists. that'll be purely it. And they probably will do it slightly better and look at smaller changes. So that will be good. And that will save the radiologists. They will then be able to go to do other things, which will be fantastic.
Grateful as ever for your input. Thank you. Professor Pat Price, clinical oncologist and co-founder of the Catch Up with Cancer campaign. Just to give you the background, prostate cancer is, as I've told you before, is the most common cancer in men, with about 67,000 diagnoses, 12,000 deaths every year in the UK, which equates to roughly 1,000 a month. And just for the purpose of clarification, I'm always happy to say that I am an ambassador for the Prostate Cancer UK campaign, just to get that out there. Anthony, you're going to be the next caller, but hopefully you can hold the other side of the news on events that have took part in East London and Nigel Farage's reaction to Sarah Poaching. We think we've talked enough about the woman. We can talk about Farage's reaction to what she said, and we can certainly talk about East London, but we've all decided that those comments were wholly and utterly unconscionable, in as much as the way she directed them towards black and Asian people in TV commercials. A couple from the emails just at the top before we go to the news. Wynne, I suggest Sarah Poaching resigns, forces a by-election, and the public can decide whether they agree with her or not. Charlie Stone in Bury, yes, what she said was racist. Is she racist? Probably not. All right, let's move on to those other events. And coming up later in the hour, we'll be looking at the hurricane on its way to Jamaica. Here's Jamaica Prime Minister Andrew Holness.
We have issued an order under the Disaster Risk Management Act declaring the entire island of Jamaica a threatened area. Shelters have been prepared, supplies pre-positioned, and emergency teams are standing by across the island.
7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara on LBC. News time then, Thomas Watts.
The Home Office is planning to use two military barracks to house hundreds of asylum seekers. About 900 men are expected to be accommodated at the military sites as part of efforts to close migrant hotels. Jamaica is braced for the arrival of Category 5 Hurricane Melissa this morning. The country's Prime Minister says there is no infrastructure that can withstand such a storm. Men with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis from the NHS within a day under a new trial. Health officials say the use of AI to interpret MRI scans is a potential game changer. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells across much of England, showers in Scotland, Northern Ireland and parts of Northern England. A high of 14 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents,
we will be talking Prince Andrew and the apparent demand that he has made to give up Royal Lodge in Windsor. Instead of having one house, he might want two. One for him, one for Sarah Ferguson. Will that wash? And what does the King do about it?
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Mark's best friend Ben follows him around. Ben's there when he wakes up in the morning. He's there when he goes to the pub. He's there at dinner time. He never leaves him. Ben died in Iraq in 2004. The trauma of that day has never left Mark. For many, the battle continues. Combat Stress provides intensive mental health treatment to UK veterans with complex mental health problems. Combat Stress, for veterans' mental health. Search Combat Stress to support our work.
Imagine a delicious patty nestled between two buns with cheese and ketchup. It's not a burger. That patty is actually sausage, which makes this a sandwich. A breakfast sausage sandwich. The new $1.99 sausage sandwich from McDonald's. Made with RSPCA assured pork. Until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Upcharges and fees apply to delivery. Subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
7:33, back to your calls concerning Reform UK. Anthony, you're at the top of the queue and you will be the next. That's after we dive into the world of business, joined by Christian May, Editor-in-Chief at City AM. And earlier I said that my interview with the Housing Secretary helped inform the front page of the Daily Mail. And I think it's helped inform the front page of City AM as well, because of the property tax, the mansion tax. What's the latest as you see it? Christian, good morning. Well, good morning. First of all, Nick, a heartfelt apology from the City AM newsroom without giving you due credit in our own front page. We can't keep up with the number of scoops that your interviews generate.
I'll watch for it next time, don't worry.
Absolutely. Of course, you absolutely set the cat among the pigeons there, because the Housing Secretary continuously refusing to rule out the reports that emerged over the weekend of new taxes, particularly at the higher end of the property market. And a lot of people involved in that industry were talkative yesterday, telling us that what all this speculation has achieved, in the words of Zoopla founder, the estate agent Zoopla, said that the usual Christmas slowdown in housing market has begun about 2 months early, because buyer demand is now down 8%, sales are down about 3% compared to this time last year. We had another estate agent saying that this is all down to the fear-mongering being generated by the talk of property taxes, and indeed the failure of officials to rule them out. And this is particularly being felt at the upper end of the market. So it's the slowdown in activity is concentrated in the higher price bands, the sharp decline in sales listings and buyer demand for homes priced above £500,000. And that's because although the property taxes that we're talking about at the moment might kick in north of £2 million, you know, any kind of squeeze on that part of the market will be felt lower down the food chain, if I can put it like that. So there's genuine frustration and concern among people in the industry, and I dare say among people who are hoping to either buy or sell before the budget as well. Plenty of wait and see is probably the watchword at the moment.
Now, for those readers who've yet to find City AM and still rely on something called the FT, the Financial Times, they're being told about Reeves, as in the Chancellor, budget sums face £20 billion blow. From where?
Well, as you say, this is a Financial Times story. They do have very good sources deep within the bowels of the OBR. I think the best way to get around it, education, is to read the FT and City AM. But the FT reported late last night that the expected downgrade in productivity in the UK economy will be far worse than the Chancellor had even been anticipating. The Institute for Fiscal Studies says that for every 0.1 percentage point downgrade in the productivity forecast, that forecast of how productive, how much output per hour British workers are producing, for every 0.1 percentage point downgrade, public sector borrowing will have to increase by about 7 billion. And the FT reported now that far from a 0.1 or 2%, 0.1 or 0.2% downgrade, the OBR is now banking on a 0.3% downgrade in figures that they'll give the Chancellor on Friday, which means actually we could be looking at a £21 billion budget black hole just on those productivity forecasts, which is going to make a difficult situation even more difficult for a Chancellor who's now really starting to think the unthinkable in terms of income tax increases and all sorts of other unpalatable movements at the budget. So the Chancellor off in the Middle East now, trying to sign trade deals, desperately trying to get the OBR to recognise the future value of these trade deals in their forecasts, and they're not really playing ball. But what would the Chancellor say? Well, she'd say, as she said last week, nobody knows what these numbers are apart from me. It's my budget. I'm in charge of it. I'll make the decisions and watch this space.
Which airline has come to ground?
Keeping a very close eye on Eastern Airways, regional UK airline, operates out of 6 UK airports. Yesterday, cancelled all its flights. Passengers who have booked with the airline have been told not to travel to the airport. All of its flights have been cancelled. Customers have been told to make alternative arrangements. It operates UK domestic flights from Gatwick, Humberside, Teesside, Aberdeen, Newquay. It also had quite a hand, I think, in moving people around the oil and gas industry, which has got its own problems. So operations have been suspended. When airlines go into administration, it's always pretty tricky, because normally when you're talking about an international airline, the administration is expected, but it's not allowed to happen until the last plane has touched down. It's not allowed to happen with planes still in the air. It might be somewhat of an easier operation with a smaller domestic airline like this, but nevertheless still a worrying turn of events for the company.
Finally, who's getting exercised about the size of Kit Kats and how much toothpaste there is in a tube of Signal?
Well, I am. I bought something last night. I won't go into details because my wife is listening, but Uh-oh. Let's just say that it was a small box of chocolate bars. The box, I'm sure, hadn't changed size in a very long time. But when I got home, I opened and realised that they're all about the size of a cigarette lighter. This is shrinkflation, and I don't know how
partial to a Freddo you are, Nick, but you might find that it has shrunk while the price hasn't, or indeed the price might have gone up.
Help me, Lou. Freddo is a chocolate bar, is it? I don't know Freddo. I mean,
yeah, you play dumb.
Mars, I can do those for you. Yeah, tell me about a Freddo. Go on.
Yeah, you play dumb on that, Nick. Very popular little frog-shaped chocolate.
Oh yes, I know Freddo. Yeah, got it.
I mean, some of the examples are quite egregious. This is compiled by the consumer champion Which. If you consider Aquafresh toothpaste, a little better for you than a Freddo, but it's shrunk from 100ml to 75ml, while the price has gone up from £1.30 to £2, and that's at several supermarkets. And you'll see this all over the place. The Sainsbury's Scottish Oats, previously sold in a 1 kilo bag at £2.10, is now the same price in a 500-gram bag. So this is really getting quite sneaky, and consumers are understandably annoyed, and Which, the consumer group, has said, look, we understand the cost of materials has gone up, cost of ingredients has gone up, cost of packaging and labour has gone up, and it's not likely to come down for a while. But if you're going to do this, don't be sneaky about it. You've got to label your things clearly. You've got to explain still what you're getting pound for pound. But I'm afraid I think it's just going to require some beady eyes in the aisles to figure out what's going on with these. And you mentioned other chocolate products, many of which, including Kit Kats and Penguin, Club Bars, etc., have now got so little cocoa in them that they're not actually allowed to call themselves chocolate biscuits.
He's really on one now. He's more angry than this than he is about the budget. Christian May, calm down. Have another Freddo. Editor-in-chief at City AM will speak around the same time tomorrow. 7:40 is the time. Anthony in Hampstead. Anthony, where do you want to take us with what we heard from Mr Farage or East London?
Before, let me just give an introduction. Last week, the mayor said that from the rivers to the sea is not anti-Semitic. Mm. And when he was asked what did he mean, he said it means context. The answer is you can't cherry pick what every elected official says. And if you go along with one, you've got to go along with the other. Therefore, Nigel Farage, don't take it out of context. Whatever he means is the way he wants to interpret it.
But do you agree with him? Was it a foreign invading army we saw in East London?
Well, they're definitely intimidating. You don't go around if these cowards have to cover themselves up.
No, I can go with army, but foreign. Yeah. How on earth does he know they're foreign?
I'm trying to make that you didn't. The same argument goes to what that you cannot keep on cherry picking. That on one elected person can say something and another one can't. That's really what it comes down to. At the end of the day, it's why doesn't everybody get last week? The only person that actually got bothered about it was Keir Starmer.
Grateful for that. Anthony, thank you. Thanks for holding. John in Coventry. You're on the radio, John.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right, sir. Where do you want to go with this one?
We've had all these stories about ISIS are going to release jihadis into the UK in the guise of immigrants, and then 400 jihadis came back to the UK. And, you know, you sort of put the stories down to a bit of sort of, you know, you take it with a pinch of salt. And then things accumulate and escalate and get to this stage. And then when you start to mention it, the government says there's nothing to see here and you're racist. And if you tweet about it, we're going to put you in prison. Mm. It's ridiculous. I don't understand where they want the line to be drawn. And I don't understand why we're getting, on the one hand, very scary stories about undocumented people coming into the UK. So you put two and two together and you think, well, if I was going to try and infiltrate the UK, that's the route I'd take. And then you see things like this happening, mm-hmm. and you suddenly start to think, well, if you're a jihadi coming back to the UK, you're not suddenly going to become a painter and a decorator, are you? You're going to come back to the country that you hate and say, right, I'm going to start to work against this country, and what can I do? Oh, I'll get all these people around me, I'll influence people, I'll cause this, I'll cause that. And then you've got a bloke like Starmer sat in the government saying, oh, we can't say anything about it because it's racist. And it's just bizarre. It's just bizarre.
But do you, and you've done a very elegant explanation of where you stand, do you think a lot of those people in East London are undocumented arrivals?
I think they're just soft in the head and they've just been influenced and they don't really realise what they're doing. I think they think that the UK is a soft touch. And also the other thing is when you come from countries that use sticks and batons to beat you about the head if you just look at somebody the wrong way, and you come to the UK and you think you can get away with murder, suddenly it goes to the extreme where you suddenly start doing stuff like that where the indigenous population won't say anything, but they say that's really out of order. And they're probably expecting somebody to come along and really stop them, but they don't. And then it escalates and escalates, and it gets to a point where it's irreversible.
John, thanks for all your input. 7:43, we'll have more on this, but let's go to the Caribbean, the slow-moving but deadly hurricane inching towards Jamaica, threatening to unleash torrential rains, possibly the worst hurricane ever to have visited the island. Landfall in the coming hours, it says here. Wind speeds of up to 180 miles an hour, the world's strongest storm this year. To Dr. Simon Boxall, who's an oceanographer at the University of Southampton, joining me now. Well, let's start with the initial question. What causes a hurricane of this magnitude, Doctor? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, hurricanes occur because we get depressions or low pressure moving across the Atlantic or the Pacific. And as it does so, these depressions, they pick up warm, moist air from the sea. And it's the warmth of the ocean that is the fuel for these hurricanes. And you get this sort of spinning tower of air, which starts off as a tropical cyclone and eventually becomes, if there's enough energy in the ocean, becomes a hurricane. Now, in this case, Melissa is the world's strongest one this year. As you said, it's going to reach 180 miles an hour when it hits Jamaica. But there are a couple of things that are also unique about this one. This is the warmest we've seen our oceans on record. So this is providing a lot of fuel for the hurricane. There's also, it's a very slow-moving hurricane, mainly because the background winds, if you like, the hurricane sits in an environment of background winds, like the general flow. And the flow at the moment in the tropics is very slow. So it means that it's moving across the ocean at about 4 miles an hour, which gives it lots of opportunity to pick up energy. And of course, when it hits landfall, rather than passing over in a couple of hours, it lingers. And it's estimated that it's going to be over a meter. That's 3.5 feet of rainfall, a fall, when it hits Jamaica. So you've got this combination of unbelievably strong winds. Can you imagine going down the motorway in a supercar and then putting your head out the window? And then having a metre of water dumped on you. It's going to cause devastation.
Doctor, how unpredictable is the tracking? Can they suddenly veer off course or on course?
The tracking's fairly predictable, I think when they start, it's difficult to know where they're going to go. What we have seen is we've seen more of these storms tracking north, but it's unusual in this case for the storm to keep tracking to the west, in other words, to go into the Caribbean and into Jamaica. Usually Jamaica is protected because as it goes over the sort of, if you like, the archipelago of Cuba and Haiti, the energy is sort of dispersed as it goes over those islands. So we've seen plenty of strong hurricanes hit Haiti and Cuba. But because this is moving so slowly and because the oceans are so warm, it's just keeping going. And the background winds, if you like, the sort of the things that are steering the hurricane through the atmosphere, because those winds are relatively weak, it's not being pushed up. So it's basically just tracking straight into the middle of the Caribbean.
Thank you so much for all the background. I've learned a lot. Dr. Simon Boxall is an oceanographer at the University of Southampton. Coming up immediately after the news, joy as the UK secures a deal for Typhoon jets to Turkey. Then later in the show, oh heck, the King got heckled.
How long had you known about Andrew and Axe Day? Had you asked the police to cover up for Andrew? What do you think should be MPs to allow to debate the boys in the House?
You'll hear from that heckler later in the show. The 7:45 LBC News headlines now from Thomas Watts.
The government is planning to use barracks in Inverness and in East Sussex to house hundreds of asylum seekers. Hurricane Melissa is expected to bring life-threatening conditions to Jamaica this morning. And men in England with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis within a day under a new trial. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells across much of England. Showers further north, a high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M25 anti-clockwise between junctions 29 at the A127 to just before the M11. It's following an accident that happened earlier. One lane is still closed for the final bit of recovery. On the M1 northbound, there are severe delays to just after junction 11A at Dunstable. And that's because a lorry hit a bridge earlier and there are long delays on the approach. Also on the M1, it's slow both ways to the London Gateway services after an accident, but southbound especially bad, where it's slow from junction 4 at the A41. In Boreham Wood, Elstree Way is closed eastbound, and that's because a lorry's broken down. And on the underground, severe delays on the Jubilee and Victoria lines.
This is LBC.
Want to own a brand new Ford Puma? test drive a Ford Puma or an all-electric Puma Jenny. And you could win one. Take a test drive and you can be entered into our competition to win a Ford Puma of your choice. Search Ford Puma Test Drive. Book a test drive online by the 30th of November and complete it by the 31st of December. For more information, see ford.co.uk.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Get extra support with Immunace multivitamins, with vitamin D, zinc and selenium, which contribute to the normal function of the immune system. Immunace from Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company. Verification at vitabiotics.com. From Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Protect your small business and understand cyber security.
9 minutes before eight. Well, we've had some good news, bad news coming up now. We had the bad news in our regular look at the world of business about jobs being lost on that airline. But good news, it looks like thousands of skilled UK jobs have been secured for years to come, again, because of events in the skies, this concerning an aircraft deal. Details now from Labour MP and Minister for Defence Readiness and Industry, Luke Pollard. Good to have you on, Minister. What is it you and your colleagues have secured and how many jobs might we be looking at? Good morning.
It's a huge bit of good news for the workers that build Typhoon aircraft across the country. Securing a deal to sell 20 Typhoon aircraft that we built in the UK to our friends in Turkey, our close NATO ally. It's an £8 billion deal, supports 20,000 jobs, in particular in the assembly locations in Lancashire, but also in Bristol and Scotland. There's 330 British companies that provide the parts and services that go into a Typhoon fighter jet aircraft. And it's a really good news day that gives them job security for many years to come. But on the back of us securing the £10 billion frigate deal with Norway only a few weeks ago, I think it's a really strong illustration that defence can be an engine for growth, supporting good, well-paid jobs across the country. And this is just the start. We want to work with more of our NATO allies to provide that cutting-edge British equipment that keeps them safe in these more dangerous times.
Fantastic news. Congratulations. What's so special about a Typhoon, Minister?
Well, Typhoon is the best fourth generation fighter aircraft on the planet. What that means is it's a good all-rounder. It not only can take out air targets, as we're seeing with NATO air policing of RAF Typhoons flying along NATO's eastern flank, deterring Russian aggression, but it's also good at prosecuting ground-based targets as well. And it's precisely because it is so agile and flexible that it's flown by partner nations across Europe and the Middle Middle East. But it's also a really important segue because in the UK, we're building the next generation fighter aircraft, the Global Combat Air Programme, with our allies in Italy and Japan. And what this deal does is it keeps the production lines flowing until those aircraft will be coming out to be built later in a few decades' time. And what it does, I think, is preserves the skills, because we often talk about the end platform, the frigate or the jet. It, for me, this is about the jobs. This is a huge jobs boost for those people that are so skilled and specialised up and down the country. The PM was in Turkey yesterday to sign the deal. He'll be meeting with workers back in the UK today, saying thank you for their skills and expertise. And as we increase our defence budget in the UK, we want more of that budget going to British companies, but we also want to attract in more orders from abroad. And if we can do that, not only will we have more resources for research and development, but we'll be able to create a stronger NATO that will be able to deter Russian aggression, but defeat it if necessary.
My only concern here is, while this is music to the ears of those who are on the Norwegian Navy or Turkish pilots, you'll be aware there was a report done by the BBC in May. A lack of military kit is a significant problem for many armed forces. The British Army has budget shortfalls, procurement problems and supply chain limitations. So it's all go for Norway and Turkey. But can I put it to you, it's not for the blokes and women who make up our amazing military forces. Minister.
Oh, no, we're absolutely buying new kit for our forces as well. I mean, if you took the frigate example that I just gave there, we're building these brand new frigates for the Royal Navy in Scotland at the moment. Having ships that are interchangeable with our Norwegian allies makes a stronger naval presence. But as we're increasing defence spending, we've got an extra £5 billion in our budget this year. That'll be an extra £11 billion by April 2027. We want more of that money to go to British firms. And I think in particular at small businesses that are the backbone of our economy. We know that the MOD only spends a small fraction of our overall budget with SMEs directly. We want to see that increased by an extra £2.5 billion being spent directly with small businesses by 2028. And if we do that, we create more jobs. We harness the skills and opportunities that exist in our small businesses, and we create companies that can not only provide our men and women of our fighting forces the latest kit, and that's likely to be things like drones, the latest technologies that we're seeing our Ukrainian friends use against Putin's illegal war, but we'll also be able to support our allies in buying that kit as well. And that makes us all stronger. And so we are investing in our people and our military capabilities, but the best way, the most cost-efficient way of doing so is buying capabilities that are shared across the NATO alliance, and when they're British, that's all for the best.
Minister, can you confirm that small boat migrants are to be housed in two army barracks, one the Cameron Barracks in Inverness, the other in the Crowborough Army Training Camp in East Sussex?
Yeah, we're having conversations with the Home Office at the moment about that. I expect the Home Office to make an announcement in due course. But I was on your programme, I think a few months ago now, back in September, where I said that we're starting the conversations with the Home Office using military and non-military sites to see how we can step up. Because the Prime Minister wants to close every single asylum hotel. I imagine everyone listening to your programme today also wants asylum hotels closed. And we think the MOD can step up and provide some of the accommodation that the Home Office will need to use to close those asylum hotels, because we've listened to the people, we've heard their anger, we want to see every single one of them closed, and using military bases is one way of doing that.
But will military personnel also be in those bases, or are these currently deserted?
No, so these will be bases that will be handed over in their entirety to the Home Office for them to run. That's the right thing to do. We have, as the MOD, we own roughly 1% of Britain, so we're a huge landowner. But we also know that many of the bases that we're talking about are either not necessary for immediate military purposes or they're disused. They're the kind of bases we're talking about, and they will provide adequate accommodation for asylum seekers. This is not luxury by any means. We're providing, supporting our Home Office guys in providing adequate accommodation. But I think it's right that just as the PM's asked every government department to do more to support the Home Office, that the MOD takes a leading role here and steps up.
What can you tell us about research submitted to MPs that says dozens of people have died as a result of Ministry of Defence Afghanistan data leaking? A report by the Defence Committee says out of 231 respondents who were notified by the MOD, 49 said family members or colleagues have lost their lives. Do you have a response to that, Minister?
Yeah, so the data leak that happened under the last government was a really serious breach of information handling. Our assessment is that being on the list of the information that was leaked doesn't necessarily put people at increased risk. We know being in Afghanistan is a dangerous place for many people. Our assessment is that the information is not yet held by the Taliban, but where we can support those people who've worked alongside our forces in Afghanistan over many years. We have been. We've got a scheme that has supported those people who worked as interpreters, but also in some of those specialist military units that were embedded with our forces over those many years to come to the UK. I think it's right that we fulfill our moral obligation to do so, but we're keeping a very close eye on what's happening in Afghanistan, and we're still processing the applications for people who could be coming to the UK for safety. And when there's a lot of focus on asylum seekers, let's be absolutely clear, people who worked alongside our forces are not asylum seekers. We owe them a debt of gratitude for the work that they did. Many of them died in support of our armed forces, and I think for those people who served in Afghanistan, they will recognise that there is support for them. I also think there's support from the British public for Afghans who worked with our forces.
Final question. Many of my listeners were shocked by details that came out regarding the scandal that now Operation Pianora is investigating. Have you got an update on Operation Pianora?
I haven't that I can give you, but I'll try and get you one that you can use later on your show, Nick.
You know what it is, don't you?
Not on the full details, so I don't want to suggest something that I don't have the information for, but I'll get you those details.
Hang on a second. What do you think it might be, Minister?
I'm not going to guess, Nick, because I don't think that's the right way to treat you or your listeners with respect.
This could be the biggest scandal ever to hit the British Army. This is the Wiltshire Police investigation into alleged offences between 1970 and 2016. The biggest ever military sex abuse scandal, and you don't know what it is.
Forgive me, Nick. I'll get you the full details on that, so you can use them later on your show.
Okay.
But on these things, I prefer to give a full answer rather than a partial one.
You didn't know what it was, did you? Anyway, okay. Congratulations on all the jobs that have been guaranteed: £8 billion, 20 UK Typhoon fighter jets, 20,000 jobs guaranteed for years to come. Congratulations to you and your colleagues, Defence, Readiness and Industry Minister Luke Pollard. 8 o'clock news on LBC's next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, hundreds of asylum seekers are expected to be moved to military sites as part of efforts to close migrant hotels. The Home Office is planning to use two barracks in Inverness and in East Sussex to house around 900 men. The current system was branded failed, chaotic and expensive in a report published yesterday. The Defence Minister, Luke Pollard's, told Nick that a formal announcement will be made in due course.
Because the Prime Minister wants to close every single asylum hotel. I imagine everyone listening to your programme today also wants asylum hotels closed. And we think the MOD can step up and provide some of the accommodation that the Home Office will need to use to close those asylum hotels.
Hurricane Melissa is expected to make landfall in Jamaica as a Category 5 storm this morning. Landslides, fallen trees and numerous power outages have already been reported. Three people have died. Winthrop Wellington, who works at a beachfront hotel, says they are braced for the worst.
We've done everything that we could within our power as a property to prepare for that. We've removed the glass railing that we have at our restaurant deck. We've also put sandbags in the most vulnerable areas. As Aaron was saying, we've done our best to communicate with our guests to think of every situation scenario that comes to mind.
Patients with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis from the NHS within a day. Artificial intelligence will be used to interpret MRI scans as part of a trial at up to 15 hospitals in England. Rachel Reeves is reportedly facing a larger than expected gap in the public finances ahead of the budget. The additional shortfall of £20 billion is understood to be the result of a downgrade to productivity levels in official forecasts. The Treasury's declined to comment. Eastern Airways, which is set to go into administration, has cancelled all of its flights. The domestic carrier operated regional services from airports including Aberdeen, Humberside and Newquay. And Brendan Rodgers has resigned as Celtic manager after a reported row with a major shareholder. Martin O'Neill, who managed Celtic more than 20 years ago, has returned to take temporary charge. In the city, the FTSE 100 is just reopening at 96.53. After closing up 8 yesterday, the pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells across much of England. Showers in Scotland, Northern Ireland and parts of Northern England. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Mind you, 4 minutes after eight on Tuesday, the 28th of October, coming up in this hour. Oh, heck, the king gets heckled, and you'll hear from the heckler. In other news, we're there, they've done it. The COVID inquiry is now the most expensive in British history. It was announced back in 2021.
The state has an obligation to examine its actions as rigorously and as candidly as possible, and to learn every lesson for the future.
Then Prime Minister Boris Johnson is now nudging £200 million, is nowhere near completion, and context is everything. So later in the show, I will take you around the world and share with you how long other countries have taken for their inquiries and how much they've cost, and I imagine you will probably be shocked. In other news, how big is your telly? Not how green is your valley. How big is your TV? Huge TVs could be an equally big waste of money because of the way the eye works. And staying with the way your eyes work, out of five motorists report as the clocks went back this weekend, there's a change in some of our headlamps in our cars, and they are blinded by the light. More on that later in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The right royal scandal took another twist yesterday when the King visited Lichfield Cathedral in Staffordshire. Well, let's bring the heckler, who wants to be known as L, into the conversation. We have done checks to ensure that he is the person and joins us now. Thank you for your time, L. When did you decide you wanted to try and put questions to the King?
First, I'd like to very quickly thank you for having me on today and thank you for your time. Originally, it was decided in conjunction with Republic that King Charles's visit was coming at a time when, of course, the Andrews scandal is all over the news. And it often feels that during visits by the royals, quite important issues or controversies are pushed aside or swept under the rug. And by bringing the issue back into the public eye in such a public manner, it sort of highlights these core problems facing the monarchy at a time when they're trying to sort of push it aside in favour of focusing on the grandeur of the event.
What was your expectation that you would hear answers?
I didn't necessarily expect to hear answers, but my main goal with it was to once again push the issue into the public spotlight. because it is very important that people are talking about the issue of Andrew's gross misconduct and also his corruption in public office. So even while I did not expect a direct response from the King, there has been a response publicly with people now discussing the issue and it being a focus.
I think you'd probably have to allow they were discussing it beforehand, Elle, but if you didn't expect answers, why did you shout at him?
Because it highlights the questions that aren't being asked by a lot of the media. I for one, haven't seen, not many people are asking about Charles's direct involvement in the Andrew case. And it brought it once again to the spotlight of the fact that the royal family has most likely known about it far longer than the general public has. And they have certainly been involved at least in pushing the scandal aside and refusing justice.
If we can suspend this very grave case involving Prince Andrew just for a moment, we will return to that. What are your feelings towards the King and or the royal family?
Well, I think the real issue at hand is the case of Andrew. However, I do believe there is a need for a democratically elected head of state to represent the country. However, I would leave comments on that more so to Republic, the organisation itself.
Right. So why is it that you have opposition towards the royal family, Elle?
I think that's quite a polarising way of framing it. Yes, I am opposed to the royal family, but I'm not necessarily hostile towards them. I am anti the idea of an unelected leader representing our country on the global stage.
But you've got no personal hostility towards the King himself?
On a personal level, no, but I am anti the institution itself and the corruption and cronyism it supports.
You probably were totally focused on the moment, but can I ask you, what was the reaction from those around you when you started your heckling?
It was quite an extreme reaction. I was immediately assaulted by members of the public. They were grabbing me, pulling my jacket and kicking me in the back of the legs. And of course, members of both the security forces and the police did nothing to prevent this. I had to make my own way out of the crowd, and I saw zero response from any members of the authority, one would say.
So no police officer or security guard or bodyguard, no one came towards you in any way?
Not that I could see. It was up to me once I had been marched forcefully out of the crowd and shoved out by the back of my neck. It was up to me to escape in my own time.
Obviously, I've seen the photographs. Can you estimate how far you were from the King?
I'd say probably only a couple of metres. I was about three people back, though I'd managed to lean in to be heard better.
How confident are you? Did he hear you?
I'm pretty sure he did hear me, because while he didn't show any extreme reaction, he was moved to the other side of the aisle, and there was a large uproar by people all around near the King.
Did you notice any of his bodyguards looking at you, glaring at you, moving towards you, Elle?
Most certainly. In the footage, you can see one of the members of who I believe to be the King's bodyguards step right up to the fence and shoot looks in my direction. So certainly it was noticed, if not by the King himself, by his security detail. And it was certainly noticed by the public, which, of course, the real issue and the most important is bringing these core problems facing the monarchy back into the spotlight.
You see, that's where I think it's not like they haven't been discussed, Elle. So I'm going to ask you, if you'll allow that this has been a very live conversation for weeks now, what did you achieve, apart from shouting at an elderly man who has cancer?
I think that's quite an interesting way of looking at it. What it has done is it's made the issue of Andrew, while of course, yes, it has been major news for a long time now, it has once again brought it back into the public eye, and it has been a very large topic of conversation over the past 24 hours.
And your Republic organisation knew of this, did they?
Certain members of the organisation did. I don't necessarily feel in the place to comment on the public's behalf, however.
Did Graham Smith know about it?
I will leave that for him to comment on, as I am not sure.
You can't tell me whether he knew or not?
I don't feel as though it is my place to say anything on behalf of Republic, per se.
Lastly, and be aware, obviously, I can't allow you to say anything that could be deemed to be illegal or breaching the law, but
yes.
What do you want to happen now as regards Prince Andrew?
I think what is needed is a full-scale royal inquiry into both the prince and his connections to, of course, Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted sex offender. And I think the main issue at hand is just the inquiry is needed mostly because of just to show respect for the victims. Because, and you mentioned earlier, you phrased it as shouting at an elderly man. Mm. And I have seen many comments phrase it as disrespectful. But my reply to that is, what about the lack of respect being shown to the victims?
But that's not the king, is it?
No, however, it is the king's brother, and he has been very closely involved as one, or one can assume he has been very closely involved with the investigations.
While I don't support what you've done, I'm grateful for your time. You want to be known as Elle. Thank you for giving me so much of your time and going through roughly what happened yesterday. That's Elle, the heckler, 13 after 8. Listening, Alexander Larman, journalist and author of Windsors at War and Crown in Crisis. You'll have better knowledge of, than I, Alexander. I can't remember the last time a monarch was heckled in this fashion. Can you? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, he was heckled last October, in fact, nearly a year ago,
when he went
to Parliament House in Canberra. And that was a senator shouted very angrily, "You are not my king."
Right.
And he accused him of genocide. But so, I mean, it's not as if these things are unknown, and certainly in the mid-90s, in the furore with his divorce from Diana, there were occasional attempts for people to say, you know, shame on you and so forth. But on the other hand, Charles has been a public figure now for most of his life, and you know, if you're a public figure, you're always going to get people who are not very well disposed towards you. And it's interesting what Elle was saying, because I completely agree with you. If you think that you're going to achieve something by going out on Monday and shouting abuse at an elderly man who's suffering from cancer, you might want to actually readjust what your priorities are in life.
Shouldn't we direct our attention now to Prince Andrew and Sarah? Shouldn't they now be trying to actively take control of this and ease some of the pressure on the king?
I think the biggest difficulty is that it's quite obvious that Andrew still doesn't actually believe he's done anything wrong, and therefore he's digging his heels in, because there's been all these stories in the media about how he's demanding Frogmore Cottage for himself and a separate residence for Sarah Ferguson.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, you think to yourself, what exactly have you done to be in a position to start bargaining? What exactly are the chips that you hold? Because unless he's essentially blackmailing Charles, the rest of his family, is saying that he's going to do something embarrassing, so they have to accede to these wishes, he's not showing any humility whatsoever. And the fact this scandal now has been lasting for 10 days and shows no signs of dying down or abating, any scandal that's lasting for longer than 2 or 3 days is seriously out of control. But the problem is, whatever happens now, the situation is not being resolved, because obviously Charles would dearly like all this to go away. He would dearly like not to be heckled at public events. Because at the end of the day, you are taking a very small but, you know, reasonable risk whenever you go out in public, yes. Because you don't know who's going to be there, and it's perfectly possible that somebody could be armed with a knife or something, and
Alexander Lohman, I'll leave it there. You wrote Windsors at War and Crown in Crisis. Thank you for your input. The next caller is in Lichfield. I wonder whether they went. There's only one way to find out. You'll hear from them right after this. Well, you've heard from the heckler at length. L. Level of support or just shouting at an elderly man? Plus, a government-commissioned report into headlight glare is on the way. By the way, it's Manfred Mann's Earth Band, if you're trying to remember the name. And I was blinded by the light yesterday. Of course, the clock's going back on the weekend. We'll take your stories after the 8:16 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The Home Office is preparing to use 2 military barracks to house hundreds of asylum seekers. Jamaica is braced for the arrival of Category 5 Hurricane Melissa this morning. And men with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis from the NHS within a day as part of a trial. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, but some showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Huge delays continue on the Essex stretch of the M25 anti-clockwise. It's now slow from junction 30 at the A13 round to 27 at the M11. It's after an accident. One lane stays closed and these huge delays do continue. Also, two problems on the M1. Firstly, delays both ways to the London Gateway services. It's following an accident. Southbound, it's slow from junction 4 at the A41 and northbound from junction 2 at Five Ways Corner. And also on the M1, there are huge delays northbound up to junction 11A at Dunstable. Just after the junction, a lorry has hit a bridge, so only one lane is open. And on the trains, London North Western can't run between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey.
This is LBC.
A safe trip begins with TRIP. Take a road trip with your family, get there safely. Do your trip checks. T, top up on island fuel. Rest every 2 hours too. I inspect tire pressure and tread. P, prepare for the weather ahead. A safe trip begins with TRIP. A safe trip begins with
Think. Do the 4 trip checks before every long journey. National Highways.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
At Lidl, there's always more to value. Like saving £28 on this week's Big Shop when you switch to Lidl Plus from Tesco Club Card. See the shop at lidl.co.uk/save. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only. Offer ends 5th of 11th, 25. Price check, 20th of 10th, 25. And pro rata based on size. Tesco also sell other products. Excludes multi-buys, T's and C's apply.
We had our smart meter installed a year ago, and it's made things so much easier. Not having to submit meter readings or having to deal with estimated bills is great.
A smart meter sends meter readings direct to your energy supplier. It means you get accurate bills, not estimated bills, and you don't even need an internet connection. Call your energy supplier to request a smart meter today.
Real testimonials voiced by actors. Eligibility may vary.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
Just coming up on 20 minutes after 8, let's go straight to Chris in Lichfield. Well, sir, did you go to the cathedral yesterday to shout at the King? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Unfortunately not. I had to work, but my wife loaded the kids up.
Okay, it's half term, I suppose, is it?
So yeah, half term, that's it. And we've been talking about it over the weekend. And
oh, lovely.
I think one of the kids had kind of latched onto the idea and was really...
How old are your children, Chris?
4, 6 and 8.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, yeah, so...
You took a year off a couple of years ago, 4 years ago, did you?
We've closed the voting.
And did your wife or children witness what happened? Did they come back and say, oh, you won't believe what happened, Dad?
Yeah, so I was getting regular updates by phone, actually. I was at work, but I was at my desk, and they'd queued, they'd gone into the public viewing area, the King arrived, he got out the car, kind of waved and went in, so they were a little bit disappointed at that point, but I said to them on the phone, just stay where you are, because when he comes out, he'll probably do a, you know, walk up and down and meet and greet, and he did, so they hung around, it was cold, and, you know, they were getting a bit bored, but when he came out, he was walking along the crowd, interacting a lot, and my wife kind of pushed the kids forwards to the barrier, so they were at the front.
Brilliant.
She couldn't believe it, really. He got within two or three metres of where my kids were.
Yeah.
And then this guy, L, started shouting, and the King security team pretty swiftly obviously moved him to the other side of the place.
Is it your wife's feeling that had L not started shouting in the way L did, your kids might have shaken hands or at least got close to the King?
Oh, absolutely. She said she's got no doubt because he was talking. He was making a point of talking. There was a lot of kids at the front of the barriers, obviously.
He's great at that.
Yeah, and he was making a point of talking to all the kids and really, like, you know, making a fuss of the kids.
Oh,
so
he does.
My wife was like, "Oh, I can't believe it." You know,
so she must have been really hacked off.
Yeah, she was actually. Yeah, on the
what did you make of Elle? So you've just listened to Elle for probably he was with me for 8 or 9 minutes, I think. What did you take from what he told us?
I'm in two minds really. I'm all for you know, free speech, and he should have a right to say what he wants to say. I wouldn't like a situation where, you know, security forces were diving on him and, you know, silencing him and bundling him into a van. You know, I don't think that's the kind of society we want to live in. But on the other hand, I kind of wonder what it was he was hoping to achieve other than maybe some publicity, which now he's got.
He has. He's in all the papers. He's just been on LBC. Chris, thank you. Best wishes to your kids. They must be so disappointed. Anyway, I'm sure there's more delights to come in half term, and give my best regards to your wife. Thank you, Chris, for all the background. Caroline is in Winslow. Caroline, your view. Oh, heck, the king was heckled.
Oh, I think it's terrible, actually, Nick. Also, Earl is such a coward that he won't be named, will he?
No.
But how dare he do this to an old man who's got cancer? And actually, it's very disrespectful. It's in the cathedral grounds. We've got children there, as your listener said, and it's sported for everybody and the king. And we do have a democratically elected head of the government, don't we? Which is the prime minister.
We do.
So we don't need a republic. We've got the royal family. I have to say, I am a royalist through and through.
Mm.
But I do see the problems they have, and I think that we should just quietly move Andrew into Adelaide Cottage.
He won't go. His ex-wife. I don't think he'll go quietly. This is the problem.
I think that is a huge problem, but Andrew's so entitled, isn't he? He thinks she's just so wonderful.
Shame what? When you look at his siblings, the king, who I'm fortunate enough I've met on a couple of occasions, Princess Anne, who is an absolute workhorse, just like her late father. And Edward's done a hell of a lot as well. He's just as if it's not from the same brood. It's extraordinary.
It is. It's like he's a completely separate person, completely entitled, sees absolutely no wrong in himself or his ex-wife. And you just think, why can't we do what we did with Edward the Quitter, just quietly shovel him over to France or somewhere, or the French wouldn't want it, but maybe...
Well, no, I think we had to give him the... Wasn't it the Bahamas? Isn't that where Edward was sent? King Edward?
He went to the Bahamas, that's right, because he was governor there, and he was quite a disaster at that, wasn't he?
You know your royal history, you're going to beat me on that, so I'm going to end. Caroline, thank you for your views, and thanks for your input. We'll have more reactions to the royals in a moment. But can I talk to you about driving? Now, I don't drive very much, not least because my car got stolen, but now I've got one back. I do drive a bit more. And I was coming back, and of course, hopefully you've now worked out that the clocks went back this weekend. And I remember thinking as I'm coming up the A2, coming along the A2, and you turn off up a side road by the top of Blackheath, Sun in the Sands, that's what I was trying to say. A couple of cars coming down the A2, I thought they were like, I thought they had full beam. And then my phone goes, I've got hands free, and it's someone who laughingly poses as a journalist, who is what's known as a setup producer, who says, there's a report coming out talking about people being dazzled by headlights. This is incredible. And now I read into it, 4 out of 5 drivers are concerned about being dazzled by vehicle headlights. The RAC spoke with more than 1,700 drivers. And now a government-commissioned report into headlight glare by a consultancy called TRL is to be published shortly. So there is a problem out there. Denise Voon is clinical advisor at the College of Optometrists. Do you mind if I ask you, are you also, I'm sure you're a passenger in cars regularly, are you a driver yourself?
I am a driver as well, yes.
And I don't know how often you're in your car or whether you go, but have you noticed this in recent years that, I don't know if it's a product of my age, but headlights seem to be getting, colours are getting brighter. No, headlights are getting brighter, aren't they?
Absolutely, brighter, and just it becomes a lot more uncomfortable to drive nowadays at night time.
So what's happening? What is in the composition of a modern headlight that's hurting my eyes, and why? How is someone dazzled? What's actually happening in the eye to get dazzled?
So in terms of the headlights, it's a number of factors. So we don't know exactly what the problem or the combination of the problems is, but LED lights are much brighter than your traditional halogen bulbs, roughly 2 or 3 times as bright, so they're brighter. Also, the colour temperature is different. So you might notice that the headlights that you're more affected by, they're a lot more white and some more like daylight compared to the orangey halogen ones that were before.
That's right. Yeah, go on. Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And then lastly, the LED lights are much more directional than the halogen lights. So you've got this very bright white light, very focused, that's not really scattering. So that's why you're noticing a lot more problems, we think, with the modern headlights.
What happens in the eye when it's dazzled? I mean, we've got a lens in here or something. I mean, how does it work again? Remind me.
So when in low light levels, when you're driving at night, your eyes are actually really good at adapting to being able to see as well as they can. So things like your pupils get a lot bigger and the cells at the back of the eye, they become much more sensitive to light. And that's great when the light level's low. When you're suddenly hit with a very bright beam, that's when it becomes too much dazzling. And then that's when you find it more difficult to see.
And what do motor manufacturers need to take from this, would you say, Denise?
Well, What we are really glad about is the College of Optometrists, along with the RAC and Baroness Hayter, had been lobbying the government for some time now to commission some research into what needs to be done about these modern headlights to make it safer and more comfortable for drivers. So you mentioned the TRL report that should be coming out hopefully in the next few weeks, and we really look forward to seeing what the results are from that.
You say how eyes can adapt. Just lastly, of course, we're the first couple of weekdays since the clocks went back. So we've been used to driving in the afternoon and having a bit more light. How long can it take someone? Because obviously it's going to be more present over these coming days because we've been used to having a bit more daylight as we've driven home.
Yes. So it can take a little while for you to adjust and sort of get used to your journey in the dark rather than in the light, but it usually quite quick. But what we found from our members at the College of Optometrists, their patients are saying that when it comes to these darker nights, they're actually choosing not to drive at night, which then becomes much more of a problem because they won't go out when they would normally go out. It leads to social isolation. And then where I work in the hospital, we're having our booking team saying to us that patients don't want to have those later appointments, and they're choosing to postpone their treatment so that they don't have to drive home at night time.
Oh, someone's just said, sorry, I said it was the last question. I promise this is, Martin has just texted, can you wear yellow tinted glasses? Would that solve it? Is there any truth to that? You're an optometrist, sorry.
So in terms of the tints that you can have, the best thing that we'd recommend anybody is to go and see their optometrist. So the very first thing you need to do is make sure you have an up-to-date sight
test. What about just looking like Heston Blumenthal and having yellow glasses? Would that solve everything? Certainly improve my cooking.
There's not a huge amount of evidence to support this, but as I say, and then there's a huge range of tints that you can have. But if you speak to your optometrist, get your most up-to-date prescription, first of all, so that you're seeing as well as you can, and they will be able to advise you which tints, if any, are useful. And because some of them you can't, some tints that you won't be able to use for night driving anyway.
Denise Voon, thank you. Your clinical advisor at the College of Optometrists. Calls coming in on that. It is apparently, and this is prior to this report, government commission report being published. But as Denise mentions, there's LED or there's something called bi-xenon headlamps. How do you know if you've got what is a bi-xenon headlamp? Have I gone really, well, I have gone really mad, but when I first got married in this country, when my children first arrived and I drove to France, did I cut out bits of black plastic and stick them on my headlamps? Or is this like some mad dream? I seem to recall going to Halfords, buying a sheet of black plastic, working out that my, what was it, a Rover, whatever it was, cutting out bits of black and sticking them on my headlamps. Or is this just some weird illusion or memory? You'll know. Perhaps you can give me a call. Plus, I warned you it was going to happen. You always knew this was going to be an absolute gangbuster of an inquiry.
We are fully committed to learning the lessons at every stage of this crisis. We will continue to learn lessons as you have done throughout the pandemic.
Boris Johnson announcing the COVID inquiry back in 2021. Yes, it is now not quite a world beater, it's a nation beater. It is the most expensive inquiry, and I will take you around the world and show you how other countries have dealt with it far faster and without anything like the same level of expense. It's 8:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrar on LBC. Let's get the news headlines. Thomas Watts.
The Defence Minister has told Nick the MOD will step up to provide accommodation for asylum seekers. The Home Office is making preparations to use barracks in Scotland and southern England to house about 900 men. Hurricane Melissa is expected to bring life-threatening conditions to Jamaica this morning. It's been upgraded to a rare Category 5 storm with winds of 175 miles per hour.
Men in England with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis from the NHS within a day. Artificial intelligence will be used to interpret MRI scans as part of a trial at 15 hospitals. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells across much of England and Wales, showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 14 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4pm.
A prime example of a British farce. This man with an avocado tote bag being released from prison accidentally before being asked by the police if he doesn't mind handing himself into them. Part of the problem of lots of different elements, the public sector in particular, it is so hard to get genuine accountability for errors akin to this.
Tom Swarbrick with cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses. LBC.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £54 million.
It'll have you dancing like nobody is watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
Right, let's get into the calls. Thank you for holding on the line. David in Watford. David, what's causing the glare? Blinded by the light, as Manfred Man of the Earth Band sang. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all.
Yes, as the lady said, she was exactly right. Right at the beginning of the conversation with her, she pointed to the spectral characteristics. The lights are too blue.
Right.
The LEDs to get white light are made up of red, green, and blue LEDs.
So what were the old ones like then?
The old what?
The old headlamps. Because I didn't feel like that 10 years ago. Go on.
Incandescent headlamps. They tend not to be so blue.
Right. Okay.
But you mentioned xenon lamps.
Oh, is it pronounced xenon? Sorry, I thought it was xenon. Right. Okay.
Xenon. All right. Xenon.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, whatever. Yeah. But the point is, they're arc lamps, and if you were welding something up, you get an arc.
But I'm not welding something up. I'm just trying to go down the A2. I'm just trying to get to Bluewater.
I know, it's madness putting arc lamps in motor cars, but they did that.
Hold on, whoa. I've got an arc lamp in my motor car. No.
They do. They used to, well, they might still have arc lamps in them, I don't know. Right. But anyway, but the point is the LED ones could be altered so that they didn't have so much blue in.
How?
By changing the manufacturer to have more of a red LED. And
you know a lot about lights, David. Did we used to put bits of black plastic on our cars?
I think you did if you went to the continent, yes.
Why?
Well, so they because of the dipped beam or the full headlight wasn't pointing in the right direction for left-hand versus right-hand drive cars.
I see what's going on. David, thank you. Julia in Wimbledon. Julia, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. I drive a little old Renault Clio, which is very old school, low to the ground. And,
right. And you love it.
I love it. It's perfect. But I am surrounded by, 4x4s with very bright headlights. And it's impossible to see when they're coming towards you.
It's really horrible. I know, it's dazzling.
And particularly, when you're going over the humps, the sleeping policemen, where you almost think that they're flashing you with a full beam.
Yeah, because it gets the height. Obviously, it changes the height of your car. Yeah, I see.
Yeah. So I find them very annoying. And the other thing that occurred to me is that certainly when I took my driving test, which was many, many decades ago, you were told not to drive, not to park or be stationary on the wrong side of the road in the face of oncoming traffic with your full beam on.
Because it'll dazzle people. Safe driving in your Renault. Thanks, Julia. Sarah, thank God I'm not going mad. I noticed a while back, 2 years or so, and I actually went to a mechanic to change my headlamps. I was going to read that. You don't want me to say your name, so I promise I won't, but I was going to read that. Louis, okay. The amount of SUV and higher ride vehicles on the road now means anyone with a regular height car struggles with their headlights being at eye level. Well, bear in mind, I'm in a Jeep, so I'm pretty high up, and it was horrific last night. Leanne in Gateshead, there are stickers that have to go on your headlamps while driving in Europe. You were right. So I wasn't mad. Same subject. Phil in Kettering. I have a Peugeot E3008 or 3008. I've reported my headlamps to them. I'm constantly dazzling drivers at night. They tell me this is called adaptive lighting, and you don't have to adjust them. They do it automatically. Gallup says, I was travelling on the M3 on Saturday, and the new red lights were blinding. I'm an older person, 73, found it very distressful and distracting. There was no escape when I turned my eyes from the rearview mirror into the side mirrors. I had to slow down to refocus my eyes. Ray's in Middleton. Ray, what can you tell me? Good morning.
Hiya, Nick. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, no, there is an issue with some of it. Yeah, the lights are bright, but a lot of people who buy these new cars don't know to adjust the beam to dip beam. They're all on high beam. You know, they're all, like, facing straight forward. That's why it comes right.
So they're on what I call full beam. Is that right?
Yeah, you put them on full beam, but then there's an adjuster button, and you adjust the button to face the lights downwards onto the floor, and a lot of people don't do that.
Oh, my God.
And the other...
When did they come in, Ray? When did they come in?
They've been in years. I've got an 11-plate Ford Fiesta, and it's down there. Put my lights on floor. And the other thing is, Nick...
Is that what that button does?
Yeah.
I thought it was turning my heated seat up.
Right, there's another thing as well. If there's a car dazzling behind you and it's in your your rear view mirror.
Yeah.
There's a button on that.
Yeah, I know. You can click it.
Well, people don't know about that.
I knew that one, mate. I know I'm not very bright, but I did know about that. But I didn't know.
I'm not saying you're not very bright, Nick.
Well, I can't wait to get home and get in my car. I suppose it's best to do it at night, isn't it? Against a plain wall or something like that.
Yeah, that's it. I drive a van. So when I first get in my van, obviously, if I pull up behind a car, I can do it in where the car is, so I can see it going downwards.
Yeah, of course. No, absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that, honestly.
No, you're speaking to one. That does explain what that button does. Mind you, I have only had the car since June because the other one got nicked, and I don't think the one that got nicked had this. But this one has because it's a bit younger. Ray, thank you. Steve in Croydon. Steve, what have you bought? You bought some bulbs, have you? What's this all about, then?
Morning, long time no speak. I bought some a couple of days ago.
Right.
The car I've recently got has got very dull driving lights.
Right.
So I've got these...
What have you got? What car do you run?
It's a VW Golf SV.
Right.
Okay. So it's 19 plate.
Right, okay.
I went to a place in Catford and bought some bulbs because I wanted to see where I was going.
Right. Went from Croydon to Catford to buy headlamp bulbs?
Yeah.
That's a heck of a journey, isn't it? Was there anyone nearer?
No.
All right, okay. Going to be like that. I'll
see you down that way somewhere. Well,
yes, indeed, you may. Yes, you'll find me. Yes.
Anyway, so everyone's saying, all these people you've lined up today are saying, don't put them bulbs in.
But I want Eden to see Park. Eden Park Motoring Centre, that's where I get my cars,
Is it? Yeah, Euro Car Parts, Catford.
Yeah, Eden Park I'll go to. That's where the car gets... Well, not this one, it's too young. Sorry, on you go, go on.
Yeah. So, do I change them or not?
What are you asking me for? No. I tell you what, no. There you go. What are you going to do now?
No, that's it. Now I'm going to change them out.
Safe driving in your Volkswagen, Steve. Thank you. Marie's in Chichester. Marie, what has your father... What has your father done now?
No.
What's Dad done now?
You talk about the stickers that they used to put. This is very vague, but I can remember my father
putting a bit of plastic on the headlights when we went to France and Italy.
That's right.
Otherwise, we'd get... Well, I mean, I would have thought it was before your time, actually. Well, not before your time, but when you were very young. yes, we used to do that. Otherwise, we'd get stopped by the police.
That's what they used to say. My dad, I can remember my dad doing, but when I first started doing it, I'm sure I did it as well. Yeah, you used to cut a bit of plastic out, didn't you, and stick it on the headlamp.
Yes.
Absolutely right.
And you just brought it back to me. I'd forgotten all about that.
Did you go on regular driving holidays through Europe?
Oh, yes, yeah, we went to Italy a lot and France, yes, yeah.
How long would it take to drive from
England? Oh, we took it, well, my mother liked to take it slowly, so we used to take 2 or 3 days, or more, 3 days to get there and then and 3 days to come back. It was, you know, rather than rushing down there, it was part of the holiday.
This is a true story. This is a true story. I had two brothers who were quite a bit older than me. One year, we drove from Kent to Switzerland in a Mini, with me sitting on my mother's lap, which was not illegal at those times, and we went all the way to Switzerland. Just think of it. Incredible. By the way, I'm not the size I am now. Yeah, five people in a Mini. I sat on my mother's lap all the way to Switzerland. Marie, thank you. Memories coming back. Nick in St Albans. The adjustable height of the dipped headlights your caller just mentioned are technically for when you have a heavy load in the back. Isn't that interesting? And the rear suspension is down, so the lights point up too much. But with modern headlights, everyone should really be adjusting them down for the sake of other drivers. Hamad says, a lot more higher SUV vehicles, so the higher lights are more dazzling. Oh, here we go. Newer cars have this function where you can default to bright beams and then lower beams. Oh, man, I can't wait to get... Oh, no, I can't go today. I'll have to get in the car tomorrow and do it. Yeah, 8:42. Dave's in Uxbridge. Dave, you're on the radio. Talk to me about these lights. Blinded by the light.
Hi, Nick. Yeah, a lot of these cars that we've got these days have got the xenon HD bulbs in them.
Right.
When they're fitted, which is designed for Europe. Germany in particular, because you buy an awful lot of German cars, BMWs, Mercedes and Volkswagen Audi Group. And they're designed to project light for cars that are doing 150 miles an hour on autobahns.
Oh.
Well, of course, we don't do that speed in this country.
No, 40
we
on the don't A2.
Well, yeah, this is it. If you're doing 140 miles an hour, then you shouldn't really be driving. But, as I say, you need to project the light out that far. And these bulbs shouldn't be fitted on UK spec cars. But a lot of them are, from the manufacturers and even from the dealers. They still sell these xenon HD bulbs.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Learning a lot on this. Enver in Cuffley, nice part of the world. Enver, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was just telling your researchers about the difference between standard bulbs and LED and xenon bulbs.
Yep, I'm learning a lot on this. Yep.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I brought a nothing too special 17-plate CLA, and we were doing a long drive, and at night time, the lights were so bad. I mean, we're talking about standard headlights with standard bulbs. You literally couldn't see nothing, and you had to put the main beam to sort of, you know, see where you're going kind of thing. And I recently converted to aftermarket, what we called xenon bulbs on it, and my God, what a difference.
In what way? Tell me what's better.
Well, I live out in the country, obviously, and going like down an A road or a B road, when you put your standard headlights on, you couldn't see nothing. With the xenon bulbs, it makes them daylight. You can see where you're actually going, and the visibility is like 100% much, much better.
How interesting. Enver, thank you. I can't wait to take this car out at night more, because I've only had that a few months. Safe driving, Enver. Let's just feature some reaction that came in. If you missed the start of this hour, I was speaking with L, and L is how the heckler wants to be known, the man who heckled the king in Lichfield yesterday. Jason in Epsom, why would you say shouting at an elderly man with cancer? It's hokum. The monarch's on an official visit, carrying out his duties, fair game. Otherwise, he should stay at home. Mark in Norfolk, the man shouting at Charles felt it was important to draw attention to the issue. Well, I feel it was important to draw attention to what a fool the shouting guy was. I'm not surprised members of the public kicked him. Well, that's what he told us here on LBC. Coming up after the news, the army's on the move. They have to get out of some barracks to make way for asylum seekers. Defence Minister Luke Pollard.
The Prime Minister wants to close every single asylum hotel, and we think the MOD can step up and provide some of the accommodation that the Home Office will need to use to close those asylum hotels.
We'll have more on that after this. 8:45 LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
The Home Office is preparing to use two military barracks to house hundreds of asylum seekers. Jamaica is braced for the arrival of Category 5 Hurricane Melissa this morning. And men with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis from the NHS within a day as part of a trial. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, but some showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M1 northbound to junction 11A at Dunstable. It's because a lorry has hit a bridge and only one lane is open. Also, severe delays continue on the M1 both ways to the London Gateway services, and that was after an accident. It's especially slow southbound from junction 4 at the A41, but all the lanes are now back open. On the S6 stretch of the M25, long delays going anti-clockwise to junction 27 at the M11. It's after an accident, and those queues now stretch all the way back to junction 30 at the A13, and also on the M25, but in Hertfordshire there are delays anti-clockwise to junction 25 at the A10.
This is LBC.
Get next summer sorted. Book a Jet2 holiday now and take your pick of our best rooms, flights and hotels. You'll get 22 kilograms of baggage included, and right now there's £120 off per couple with MyJet2. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person and lock in the price for next summer. Jet2 Holidays. Package holidays you can trust. Up to national protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, 4 McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11am, not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants, subjects availability.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero-emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Solutions to help any size business stay protected.
11 minutes before nine. So exactly an hour ago, I started my conversation with Defence Minister Luke Pollard, in which he didn't know what Operation Pianora was, which is potentially the biggest military sex scandal ever to hit the British Army. But that's a separate conversation. He was on to talk about the great deal that's been done, which will secure jobs for years to come, selling Typhoons to Turkey, to the Turkish Air Force, or whichever way that goes, I don't know. But also, we're responding to a story that I mentioned when we went through the headlines in the newspapers. Small boat migrants will be housed in two army barracks in Scotland and the south of England. From next month, a total of 900 migrants will be housed under plans to use Cameron Barracks in Inverness and Crowborough Army Training Camp in East Sussex. Small boat arrivals will start being housed in existing military accommodation at the two sites by the end of next month. So I put this to the Defence Minister, Luke Pollard. He told me the MOD is ready to step up to help the government eliminate the use of those migrant hotels.
We're having conversations with the Home Office at the moment about that. I expect the Home Office to make an announcement in due course. But I was on your programme, I think, a few months ago now, back in September, where I said that we're starting the conversations with the Home Office using military and non-military sites to see how we can step up. Because the Prime Minister wants to close every single asylum hotel. I imagine everyone listening to your programme today also wants asylum hotels closed. And we think the MOD can step up and provide some of the accommodation that the Home Office will need to use to close those asylum hotels, because we've listened to the people, we've heard their anger, we want to see every single one of them closed, and using military bases is one way of doing that.
But will military personnel also be in those bases, or are these currently deserted?
No, so these will be bases that will be handed over in their entirety to the Home Office for them to run. That's the right thing to do. We have, as the MOD, we own roughly 1% of Britain, so we're a huge landowner. But we also know that many of the bases that we're talking about are either not necessary for immediate military purposes or they're disused. They're the kind of bases we're talking about, and they will provide adequate accommodation for asylum seekers. This is not luxury by any means. We are providing, supporting our Home Office guys in providing adequate accommodation. But I think it's right that, just as the PM's asked every government department to do more to support the Home Office, that the MOD takes a leading role here and steps up.
But a lot of you expressing concern. Christopher in Cardiff: the government solves the problem of housing unidentified and undocumented fighting age young men who've broken into our country by putting them in British Army barracks. One can only hope these barracks are completely bereft of any useful equipment. And someone else who is serving military, and obviously I respect his or her request to not name them, to respect their anonymity, says, I have to tell you, I nearly said the barracks. At the barracks, I won't even say that. At the barracks, this is causing absolute fury. Soldiers are going to be moved out of perfectly acceptable accommodation into substandard accommodation to make way for people who've just arrived in this country and possibly would actually actively want to fight against us. Who can say this makes any sense? John's in Glasgow. This is John, the point you want to make. Good morning.
Hello?
Hello, John, you're on the radio. Go ahead, sir.
Oh.
John, yes, speak. John?
Can't hear a thing.
John, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. I can hear you now.
Come in, Glasgow.
Good morning.
Here comes the vote from Glasgow. John, what's the point you want to make, sir?
The point is, it's nothing to do with where they're housed and the accommodation as well. It's just the part on the radio that got me was men only. Is that right?
I would think it would have to be, because they would obviously not want to mix them with women because of issues that could be there, John. Why does that anger you?
There's no family, so all these people coming over on the boats are solely men.
Well, that's certainly what the minister said. I mean, I can't speak, obviously, because I'm not in charge of the accommodation, but let's go to what he said. What do you take from that, John? What do you take from that,
you've got hotels all around the country that they're housing them just now in little pockets. So let's just say you're going to put 450 in one and 450 in the other in a little town out in Inverness.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous.
Tell me why it's ridiculous, John.
It's just asking for trouble. That there's going to be no mixing. You're putting men into a barracks. There's going to be frustration there. There's going to be it's absolute craziness. Craziness.
There's no solution really that works for this, is there, John? Just lastly.
Yeah, there is. Put them on a plane and send them back. I never thought I would say it, but I tell you, I think Mr. Trump, maybe not as violent as he's doing it, but he's definitely got the right idea. His country first, definitely. They're coming through all these countries to get to us.
They won't take.
And I know there's genuine people out there that are asylum seekers, but then there's other people that are just on a food ticket.
But John,
that's what they're doing.
John, they won't.
They're on a.
John, the other countries won't take them back, John.
So why should we?
Well, they're here. They land here.
Yeah,
you know,
drop them off on an island, send them to Jamaica, and maybe they'll get blown out.
Well, let's not wish that on them, and of course, let's hope that no one in Jamaica gets blown out. John, thank you for battling with a bad phone line. I'll probably end it there. A lot of reaction coming on this. Andy says, I agree with using military barracks, but absolutely not Scampton. That's an historic historic site which played an important part in British history. It must be preserved and respected. Isn't that, you'll know, that's the Dambusters barracks, wasn't it, RAF Scampton? I'm 90% certain. This comes in, just checking I can read this. Julius, just wait for the complaints from the immigrants about the standard of living accommodation of the barracks. That will get publicity, but not the living standards of our army. This comes in, gosh, you all want to speak about this. Jim in Whitehaven, can you imagine an ex-service member, homeless, seeing people you went to war with, walking off buses into hotels and now into army barracks? My goodness, says Jim. It doesn't seem the great solution. Paul is in Crowborough. Nobody wants them coming to Crowborough. Tom says, Crowborough Tommy Godstone says, Crowborough Training Camp is currently one of the biggest camps of the county cadet forces in the southeast, not to mention a major hub for the parachute regiments. For the cadets to lose this base as a training facility is abhorrent. Cadets are still children. Giving back to the community via charitable means in the local community, as well as prerequisite training to joining the actual army. These are the people we should be nurturing. A lot of anger about that idea. We might return to that. Five minutes to nine is the time. Let's get back on the roads. And 80% of you report being dazzled by new-ish headlamps. Berinda's in Ruislip. Berinda, what can you tell me on this? You're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I mean, less so about the dazzling lights. I do get dazzled by them, but what I find more concerning is that a lot of cars now have the DRL, which are daytime running lights, mm-hmm. and then people often think that that puts their lights on. So with the earlier darkness and in the evening and the mornings, I find that people are driving around with just their DRLs on. And that doesn't illuminate your back, so you can't actually be seen from the rear.
So what? How do you make sure you don't do that then? Sorry.
You switch your lights on. I think from the moment you unlock your car, your lights will come on. You get sort of like a strip or a halo around your headlight, and then when you're driving around in the day, those are sort of automatically on, with the car being on.
So if you were to sit in my car now. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little button. Use those buttons. It's just res auto, and I've just switched it to auto. Is that
auto's fine? Yeah, absolutely, because that would work. But a lot of people, I mean, I've had it. I keep my car on auto, but when I get it back from MOT, I often forget to put it back on, and I'm driving around, and someone will flash me to say, because somebody's touched the light switch.
I see.
But often people will just drive around without their lights on or on auto, and all you see is the front lights, and don't see them from behind.
Got it. Okay, I am actually genuinely going to check my lights. I don't know if I'll have time to do it today, but before I go out again. Berinda, thank you. Last minute or so, let's get one more call in on considerable concern about migrants. And again, the minister saying they're all men. I don't know. Obviously, I don't know. There's 900 of them, so I guess 450 in each. One in Inverness and one in Crowborough. Andy's in Shrewsbury on this. What do you want to tell me, Andy? Morning.
Morning, Nick. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I don't necessarily disagree with some military or older military installations being used. But one place that I think deserves special reference and shouldn't ever be used for such things is RAF Scampton.
This is the Dambusters place, isn't it?
That's right. It's such a sorrowful-looking place if you ever go past it these days. And it plays.
Is it in Lincolnshire? Pardon my utter ignorance.
Right.
It is it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
It's such a sorrowful-looking place these days, and yet it plays such a crucial part in British history. And it's, those Dambusters went on the damn near suicide mission. The place deserves some respect, and it shouldn't ever be used for that. It should have a proper historical reference and be treated as such, you know.
Presumably it was used for the whole of the Second World War. Do we know?
I believe so, yeah.
Do we know what happened after, in 1946? Was it continued as an RAF base then, or do we not know what happened to it?
Yeah, well, I think it's had various phases where it's come back into use and then it's gone back into decline again. And when you drive around the perimeters of it now, you know, it does look so sorrowful.
Mm.
And yeah, it's just such an important part of history, and so many lives were lost there.
Well, it should actually, I mean, in reality, lastly, it should be a museum, shouldn't it? That's what it should be.
Absolutely. Yeah. It should be. It should have special, it should be grade one listed.
Absolutely with you. Safe driving, Andy. You obviously do quite a few miles if you've been from Shrewsbury to Lincoln, so you have probably have problems with headlamps as well. But me must move on, Andy. Thank you. And this was the announcement from then Prime Minister Boris Johnson back in 2021.
The state has an obligation to examine its actions as rigorously and as candidly as possible and to learn every lesson for the future.
Boris Johnson, of course, announcing it back in 2021. It is official. That is now, as it overtakes £192 million in the Bloody Sunday inquiry, the most expensive inquiry in British history. But I'll take you around the world and you'll be shocked at how quickly other countries have dealt with it. Plus, shrinkflation, the reality with the amount of toothpaste in your tube or even the chocolate in your chocolate bar. I want you to tell me what you believe are the worst offenders. Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, a defence minister has told Nick that further MOD sites are being identified to replace asylum hotels. The Home Office has confirmed two barracks in Inverness and in East Sussex will be used to house about 900 men. A parliamentary committee branded the current system as failed, chaotic and expensive in a report published yesterday. Luke Pollard says the bases will be handed over in their entirety.
Many of the bases that we're talking about are either not necessary for immediate military purposes or they're disused. They're the kind of bases we're talking about, and they will provide adequate accommodation for asylum seekers. This is not luxury by any means.
Hurricane Melissa is expected to bring life-threatening conditions to Jamaica this morning. It's been upgraded to a rare Category 5 storm with winds of 175 miles per hour and extreme rain. The NHS in England is to trial new technology which can give a prostate cancer diagnosis within a day. It uses AI to interpret MRI scans for men suspected of having the disease. Health officials say it could be a game changer. Clinical oncologist Professor Pat Price says it's just one part of the process.
It will be faster and that'll be great, may avoid biopsies. So if this trial works out, that will be one step that will be so much faster. And so men won't be thinking, oh, I've got to go for my scan, would it be positive? They'll know. But the problem is, once you've been diagnosed, if it is positive, you have to have treatment. Currently, radiotherapy, some places of the country, there's 9 months waiting list for your treatment.
Japan's Prime Minister has promised to pursue a golden age of the country's alliance with the US. Sanae Takaichi has been hosting Donald Trump for talks in Tokyo, where the pair have signed a minerals deal. Amazon is reportedly preparing to cut as many as 30,000 corporate jobs from this week. Executives have previously warned staff roles could be replaced by AI. The cuts, impacting almost a tenth of Amazon's workforce, are expected to fall on admin and HR roles. Record-breaking former England cricketer James Anderson will be knighted at Windsor Castle later. The personalities being recognised also include the 10cc frontman Graham Gouldman, who will become an MBE. In the city, the FTSE 100s reopened at 96.53 after closing up 8 yesterday. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.14. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells across much of England, showers in Scotland, Northern Ireland and parts of Northern England. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. So turn up that dial. The EuroMillions jackpot is £54 million. Go on, play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after nine, Tuesday, October the 28th. It's official now. The COVID inquiry is the most expensive in British history. £192 million. There's no way it will stop short of £200 million. Why has it taken so long? I'm going to take you on a global tour and you will hear others. Plus, the disturbing report that adults would not help a young boy if he's in trouble, fell off a bike or whatever it might be, for fear of being labelled as a sexual predator. I'll be asking you, particularly if you're a bloke, I think it's probably easier if you're a woman. If a lad came off a bicycle in front of you, cut his leg or whatever, the initial reaction is, of course, is to go and pick him up and to comfort him in some fashion, but would you then think, oh, God, he's going to turn around and suggest that I inappropriately touched him in some fashion? Plus, have you noticed that you've not got as much toothpaste in your tube, as much Gaviscon in your bottle, or as much...
Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
That's that for Kit Kat as shrink inflation continues to bite.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Let me start by saying, of course we need an inquiry into COVID. Of course we do. And I hate the expression, but I can't think of another form of words immediately. Lessons, I know, we all chant it together, class. Lessons might need to be learned in the horrific event that we had something similar. But we now know that it is the most expensive inquiry. £192 million, and all experts suggest it will be north of 200. It publishes quarterly financial reports with cumulative expenditure, and it has been going on and on and on.
So let take you elsewhere. They had a parliamentary inquiry in the Netherlands. It managed to get done in a little over a year, and it cost £7 million. Now, again, I don't have the number of deaths, but I'm sure pro rata, it's not if COVID decided to give the Dutch a swerve. Ireland, around 12 months, €1 million. Sweden, all done in under a year, €17 million. France, pretty similar. Why, for the love of all that's holy, has this cost so much? William Yarwood is media campaign manager for the Taxpayers Alliance. Taxpayers, you, me, William, are we getting bang for the buck here, or is this completely out of control? What's your view? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks so much for having me on the show. And no, I don't think they are. You rightly cited other countries which have done a COVID inquiry in a shorter amount of time in a more cost-effective way. Sweden, also another country that's done it in a more cost-effective and shorter way and actually produced some real results. But from what we've seen from the COVID inquiry, quite frankly, Nick, is tittle-tattle about essentially palace parliamentary drama. That's all we've heard, really. Ministers sharing WhatsApp messages and the like. I actually think the victims of COVID and the people who died during COVID and people who suffered during COVID deserve a lot better than that. And I don't think they're getting with this inquiry, and they're certainly getting rinsed for their wallets on it. And another thing also, Nick, when we at the Taxpayers Alliance predicted back in May 2024 that this inquiry is going to be north of £200 million, the COVID inquiry themselves said that our analysis and our forecasting was quote-unquote flawed. And yet I think with yesterday's figures, we've been proven to be actually quite correct. And if not going to be north of £200 million, it's going to be north of more than £200 million.
Any idea how they could rein it in now? Or is it such an enormous beast, it's untamable?
I think there are ways to tame it in. I mean, I think the legal costs alone are quite extortionate. I mean, the cumulative cost by spending of the COVID inquiry at the end of March 2025 on legal costs and solicitors was about £48 million alone. And also there's so-called, they've spent £22 million on so-called operational and cost-cutting costs. Now, I don't know about you, Nick, but spending £22 million on cost-cutting costs doesn't really sound like cutting costs at all, does it at all? I certainly think there's areas to rein in, certainly, but I don't think that this government's going to do so. I think they're just going to allow it to continue on until June 2026. But again, Nick, this could go on for longer than June 2026, meaning that more and more money is going to be funneled into it, and answers are actually not going to be, questions are not going to be asked and not answers aren't going to be given.
Lastly, and you touched on this, I think, at times, hasn't this just descended into political point scoring? Conservatives saying this about Labour, Labour saying this about Conservatives, or whatever it might be.
Yeah, it has, Nick, and that's a genuine shame. I think a lot of inquiries and a lot of reviews, even though they're set up with good intentions and set up to find out what went wrong in a certain area of the British state, 9 times out of 10, they just become political point scoring arenas for politicians to grandstand and say, well, I didn't do this, they did this, and grandstanding and blah, 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 blah. And unfortunately, you're seeing a little bit of that with the grooming gang inquiry at the moment, where different parties are grandstanding and moralising, when in reality, those poor girls who are brutally groomed deserve better than that. And I also think that people who suffer during COVID deserve better than just political tittle-tattle from their elected politicians. So, yeah, it can be done a lot better, Nick, to be honest with you.
William Yarwood is media campaign manager at the Taxpayers Alliance. Thanks for your time. Let's just break down some of this, because context is everything. I've given you context globally, and I've taken you to other countries such as Ireland and Sweden and the Netherlands. Let me tell you how this £192 million... Bloody Sunday came in at £191.2 million over 12 years, the Bloody Sunday inquiry. Now, this is what we're spending on this one, the COVID inquiry. The chair has been paid £794,000. Well, it's a heck of a job to do, so I don't envy her that. But solicitors have cost £59.5 million. £14.6 million has gone on accommodation. Other costs. I wonder what that means. £717,000 just gets filed under others. Is it money well spent? Well, Professor Naomi Fulop is spokesperson for the COVID-19 Bereaved Families for Justice UK organisation and joins me now. And I think this is informed by personal circumstances, and I'm very sorry that you suffered a loss. Might I ask the listeners who it was? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Thank you for having me. Yes, my mother died of COVID in January 2021. A thousand people a day were dying of COVID. And I do remind people of that because I think there's been collective memory loss about the trauma that the whole country has been through.
I think you're right, but pro rata, there were similar deaths in France and Ireland and the Netherlands, and it's not taken anything like the same amount of money or time. Why might that be?
So, if I could say that, first of all, the UK had the third worst mortality rate from COVID in Western Europe. So our performance was spectacularly bad. And it's, as you said at the beginning, Nick, it's really important to have this inquiry because we need to understand why so many people died unnecessarily and so that we can make sure we're prepared for the next one, which I think you said if, but it's not if, Nick, unfortunately, it's when. And the inquiry has very carefully uncovered misconduct, corruption and neglect that led to those failures. So, for example, we know that £3.8 billion was wasted on inadequate VIP PPE through the corrupt VIP lane. And that was really important that that has come out and that we ensure that that never happens again.
A lot of that during COVID, didn't we?
We knew some of it. We knew some of it through very good investigative reporters. But more of that has come out in the inquiry. And we wait for recommendations to ensure that that doesn't happen again. And next month, the report on the second module on the role of government decision-making is due to come out, which unfortunately, as your previous speaker said, the media highlighted the WhatsAppery shenanigans when actually the inquiry has brought out very important, and we hope to see them next month, recommendations for how government decision-making and the role of scientific advice needs to change ahead of the next pandemic.
Professor, I absolutely respect your position, and of course it's informed by your loss, and again my commiserations, but I have to put for you, and I know you're not in charge of this inquiry, it's been sitting for more than 3 years, it costs £160,000 a day. You can't honestly tell me the taxpayer is getting value for money for that, Professor.
So you'll be pleased to learn, Nick, and I think your listeners will, that there is a solution to this. Unfortunately, not for the COVID inquiry, but for future inquiries. You'll know about the Hillsborough Law, which has just been put before Parliament.
Yes.
Well, that includes a duty to assist. And what that means is that public authorities will have to hand over evidence straight away. They won't be able to hold it back. And that means inquiries will be able to crack on, understand what the issues are, and move on to make recommendations.
You do agree.
And that's why we, as our group, COVID-19 Bereaved Families for Justice UK, we absolutely support Hillsborough Law. And we are working with other groups to make sure that it gets through Parliament, not watered down.
So you do agree this one hasn't cracked on, to use your language?
It has taken longer than we would have liked. That is absolutely true. However, it is important that the evidence is looked at carefully and in a considered manner.
Again, commiserations for your loss. I hope you get from it what you want. Your Professor Naomi Fulop, and you're with the COVID-19 Bereaved Families for Justice UK. We'll hand this over to you. £160,000 a day. It started late June 2022, so we've had more than 3 years. And what have we learnt? In Sweden, as I've just told you, it cost a few million euros, and they all got on with the rest of their lives. Now, I take on board that we had a higher number of people who died, but failures within the NHS or government or whatever it might be, failures that are identified, really tragically, the number of lives lost, would it be an influence? In fact, wouldn't it just be find the pole and fix it for next time? We'll take your calls on that. Sonny, you're going to be the first caller. Is that money? It'll be another £160,000 again today. Meanwhile, question for you as we approach 9:15. What do all these products have in common?
Terry's chocolate orange.
It's not Terry's. It's mine.
Aquafresh 3 is the only one with all three. 3-in-1 protection for your family.
For dual relief from heartburn and indigestion, Gaviscon Double Action.
I
never heard the second one, had you? Terry's Chocolate Orange, Aquafresh and Gaviscon. All examples of shrinkflation. But what's the product that's got you gnashing your teeth in rage? Because you're being had over by shrinkflation. More on that after the 9.15 LBC News headlines, read by Thomas Watts.
The Home Office is preparing to use two military barracks to house hundreds of asylum seekers. Jamaica is braced for the arrival of Category 5 Hurricane Melissa this morning. And men with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis from the NHS within a day as part of a trial. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, but some showers in Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. So all the lanes are back open now on the M1 northbound at junction 11A at Dunstable, but there are still lengthy delays on the approach. Also delays on the M25 anti-clockwise from junction 30 at the A13 to 28 at the A12. That's also after an accident, and all the lanes are open here as well. Also on the M25, clockwise queues at 2 junction 27 at the M11, also following an accident. Very busy in Whips Cross. Whips Cross Road is partially blocked both ways after an accident, and in Boreham Wood, Elstree Way remains blocked eastbound after a lorry broke down. On the underground, no Waterloo and City Line running at all, and Greater Anglia services are delayed by about half an hour between Wickford and Southminster.
This is LBC.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2024 UK and EU Amazon packaging data.
A Southern train is a place where you can wind down and catch up. A chance to let conversations flow and plans unfold. And swap doomscrolling for telling stories. Too good for the group chat. Make the journey part of the joy and save one third with off-peak group tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Protect your small business and understand cybersecurity.
Coming to you, Sonny, to talk about the COVID inquiry. Just a couple of, actually a lot of anger coming in. Scott in Dorset, the COVID inquiry could have been completed in 6 months for a fraction of the price. We need to know what we did wrong and how we can prepare for the next pandemic. So far we've found out Boris panicked, Matt Hancock was an idiot, and Dominic Cummings had a potty mouth. We all knew this before the inquiry. Why does everything in the country take so long? Graham in Preston agrees. Migrant hotel bills, COVID inquiry costs, government spending spiralling out of control. The sooner we take control of our finances and start spending taxpayers' money wisely, the better. I remind you, over the inquiry, they will manage to spend another £160,000 today. £192 million. There's no way it will stop short of £200 million, and other countries have got through in considerably, markedly shorter, quicker order, and way, way lower. I think Ireland was about €1 million. Now, was it as all-encompassing? Probably not. But do we actually know? Do you not think in some part, understandably, the anger is fuelled because people lost loved ones in COVID, but no amount of money is going to get your grandmother back, or whoever it might be? So continuing to spend tens of millions of pounds is only inconveniencing you and, probably more importantly, future generations. Sonny's in Ealing. The point you want to make, Sonny. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Long time listener, first time caller.
Oh, how long have you been listening, sir?
10 years, maybe.
How long I've got away with it. Yeah.
One I wanted to make was the amount of money that's being wasted. I was one of the 3 million people, sure someone else out there will be listening, who was supposed to start a new job. Because I'd resigned, I couldn't get anything from the government because I'd resigned from my previous job. Mm. I couldn't be furloughed.
Oh, crazy.
How did you survive? Not very easily.
I'm sorry.
It was an absolutely awful time. I was supposed to start on the day of lockdown, start a new job.
Oh, 23rd of March. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, 23rd of March, 2020. Mm. Worst bloody day ever. It was a couple of days before when I was called by the employers and told we're retracting the offer because everyone's gone into lockdown. And because Rishi Sunak in his infinite wisdom had decided to set this date in February that you had to have been working for a company, I was unable to be furloughed, so there was nothing I could do.
How did you survive?
On whatever money I had.
Were you able to do, driving work or, I don't know,
sort of decorating? No, I couldn't get a job because all the driving jobs, every kind of job that was there was taken.
Yeah.
And, by people a lot of the time who were doing their second job whilst being furloughed. So,
ever work out how much it cost you? How much you reckon you
lost? It was probably about 20 grand out of pocket.
Wow.
I was supposed to get married that year, and that didn't happen. It was a horrible time. Financially, the government could compensate us. I mean, there's no way of anyone being compensated for their loss. I feel for all those people that lost. I know people who passed away, and it was just a horrible time. But the fact that they're spending stupid amounts of money...
Mm. Let me ask you...
Pointless inquiries is ridiculous.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So they spent £160,000 yesterday, they'll spend £160,000 today, and they'll spend another £160,000. Are we getting bang for the buck, as they say, across the Atlantic?
No, we're getting absolutely nothing, are we?
They're going to come back with the
same facts that you just mentioned one of your callers...
Yeah, Boris was an idiot, Matt Hancock told fibs, and Dominic Cummings had a foul mouth.
Exactly. Yeah. It's funny how Rishi Sunak actually, he changed the rules about the furlough and allowed people who were to be transferred to be furloughed.
Right.
And his father-in-law's company, Infosys, had just to be transferred a load of people into their company.
Hey, I've got to ask you, did you marry your...
I did in the end,
yes. I did the following year. All right. And everything happy, all doing well?
Yeah, all good.
You're working now, my friend.
I'm working now, yes. Good man.
Keep with it. Sonny, be well, thank you. John's in Enfield. John, I've already talked about Sweden, but you want to remind listeners about how they manage it over there. Good morning.
Yeah, obviously, how they manage the inquiries is probably a much better system. But part of the, I don't know if you remember, but Sweden actually came out with the cost of COVID far less because in general they didn't go into lockdown. Do you remember?
And yes, everybody I've read that.
The gist of why that happened was that by Swedish law, the medical side of Sweden, is a decision only taken by the medical people, and the politicians are not allowed to get involved in the decision process.
Right.
And this is why Sweden, obviously took via the medical route, and politicians weren't able to get a little grubby hands on getting the opportunity to go for a PPE. So the medical side, by law, that was the whole.
So do you think that's why they've come through so much quicker and so much cheaper than we have managed?
Well, on the inquiry side, obviously, I'm not sure how that works, but I'm talking about COVID in terms of lockdown. They didn't go into lockdown, you see, and billions and billions of money was saved by they came out of it, but compared to everybody else, with far less cost to their
the economy. Yeah, the economy was not set back to the same level. John, thank you for reminding us that. Lulu asks, can you tell us what the money is being spent on? Well, I did earlier, but very, very quickly. The chair is getting £794,000 plus 41,000 expenses, and I don't envy her that. That is a heck of a job that woman has on her hands. Counsel and solicitors, £59.4 million. £717,000 on staff travel. £14.6 million in accommodation, and on and on and on the tens of millions go. It will be another £8 million this week. Just let that hang in the air. £8 million last week, this week, next week, and what are we getting for our money? As Sir Ian Duncan Smith said in a newspaper interview, some people are seeing this as an opportunity to make money and it needs to be reined in. We might return to that. But let's come to a really troubling story that I saw. And I want you to imagine, not that I want it to happen for a moment, but I want you to happen that a child in front of you falls off his, or possibly her, falls off his bicycle. Aged, I don't know, 11, 12, 13, as you're walking down the road. What's your reaction going to be? I hope, and I haven't seen a child fall off a bicycle for some time, I hope I would run over and help the child up, and if they've got a bleeding knee or whatever, if I've got a tissue or something, or do you want me to ring your mum? I wouldn't say, let me drive you to your mother. I'm not going to do that. Listen, why don't we ring your mum, and I'll stay here with you. I hope that's what I do. So what do we make of the report that adults are being deterred from helping vulnerable children for fear of being branded sexual predators? So says a founder of what's called the Eden Project, Sir Tom Smith, who's part of the Lost Boys Task Force. That's a national initiative to support young men. Says older people could help more, but are held back by a culture where adults fear that taking an interest in a child means they'll be branded a predator. He says, I would say there's actually a lot more adults who could probably contribute a heck of a lot more. But he was talking about the concern that you could be branded a sexual predator. Paul Oginski is former youth policy advisor to a number of governments, CEO of Vibe. We speak to him regularly. That's, of course, up in Merseyside. He wrote the book, The Best of Us, Life Lessons from Youth Work. You're walking through Liverpool or wherever you are in Merseyside later today and a 14-year-old comes off his or possibly her bicycle. What would you do? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I would help them up and I would brush them off the knees and say, are you okay, like I would to any other human being who fell off the bike? I think what Sir Thomas point now is we're getting this gap between adults and young people, which we really need to stop. Our young people are amazing, and this fear of being branded as a paedophile or something is actually causing more.
But do you recognise what Sir Tim is saying? You do agree with what he's saying, don't you, Paul, or you think he's wrong?
Well, no, I think he's right. I like Sir Tim, and I think he's right. And we have all got some of a mind to safeguard, and absolutely. But where's this heading, Nick? It's like if we're scared and we want to run away every time we see a child or something like that, it's like it's going to destroy our society.
But
we
is
need
the way
to
we're
build
heading,
them
Paul.
Relationships.
That is the way we're headed, sir.
Yeah, but why? We're not giving people the opportunity to mix and socialise young people and adults together. We're closing all the youth clubs. We're not even giving adults an opportunity to mix together. We're closing all the pubs. We've got to really give people a chance to mix. And this whole idea of stranger danger and drilling that into your children is actually causing society a lot of damage. Yes, our young people need to be aware that there are some very nasty people out there, but they also need to be aware that most people are kind, most people are supportive, most people are going to help.
Paul Oginski is a former youth policy advisor, now CEO of Vibe. Thank you for that. Ed's in Hounslow. Now, you were in a shopping centre, were you? What happened, Ed? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. There's a number of occasions throughout my life, actually, where, you know, quite interesting things have happened.
Right.
One was in a shopping centre where I came across a little boy about 3 years old, something like that.
Three? Oh, my God.
Yeah, about three.
On his own?
Yeah, I mean, you'll often see these things and you stop and observe and then you'll find that the parent or whatever is nearby and they'll come to the aid and this kind of thing.
But why would you let a three-year-old out of your sight? Like, probably, why wouldn't you hold his hand, let alone out of your sight?
Well, if you know, you will see this sort of thing prominently. It's not uncommon. But in any event, this little child was completely on their own. I realised that. So I approached them, and straight away what I did is I put my hand up and waving it, so you're making yourself overt as to what's going on. I took them by the hand, took them over to a shop, opened the door and asked the people in the shop if could they assist, which they did, and that's how to deal with it. So you've got
to
make
it clear.
What happened
to the little boy?
Well, security came along and, you know, they dealt with it. But
well, hopefully he was reunited with mum, was he, or dad?
But,
yes.
Yeah, there's an even more interesting one than that. Yeah.
How could it
when
be
I
more
was walking,
interesting?
I was walking along the road residential area.
Right.
And coming towards me on the pavement.
Yes.
Was a baby crawling towards me.
What, on its own?
on his own, crawling on the pavement towards me. Could have walked across the cars and into the road or whatever. Didn't happen. I picked up the baby,
walked along.
Yeah, I walked along and saw a door open.
Oh, my God.
Went to the door and, you know, made myself known. And the father came out and said, oh, my God, you know, I realised the baby had walked out of the door onto the pavement.
And was making his way along. Ed, two stories, thank you. I've got to go to the news. More calls coming in on this. And coming up after the news, that's that.
Have a break. Have a Kit Kat.
For Kit Kat, as they slash the size of those chocolate fingers. They're not alone. Gaviscon, many other products too. 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari here on LBC. The headlines from Thomas Watts.
A Royal Navy patrol vessel is in the Caribbean to support the response to Hurricane Melissa. Jamaica is braced for the Category 5 storm to make landfall, with 175 miles per hour winds expected. Hundreds of asylum seekers are expected to be moved to military sites as part of efforts to close migrant hotels. The Home Office is planning to use two barracks in Inverness and East Sussex to house around 900 men. Patients with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis from the NHS within a day. Artificial intelligence will be used to interpret MRI scans as part of a trial at up to 15 hospitals in England. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells across much of the country, but showers developing in Scotland, Northern Ireland and parts of Northern England. A high of 14 degrees.
This is LBC.
Yep, I'm still dancing. And there's still time to get in tonight's EuroMillions draw.
So turn up that dial.
The EuroMillions jackpot is £54 million. Go on, play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Train to Chichester. Flasks filled, snacks packed, all ready for Maisie's first stargazing adventure.
Come on, Maisie. Follow everyone up to the top of that hill.
Oh, look, that one's the plough.
Shooting star. Wow.
Made it. Last train back and feeling cosmic. And it seems we have an astronaut in the making. Download the Southern Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Hey, it's me, your dishwasher. I'm sorry about the chaos last night. I think a fork got jammed in my racks. Whoops. Don't even check the bills. I've overdone it. Don't get mad, okay, but I used up lots of power yesterday. Sometimes you just have to blow off some steam.
It can feel like all your energy does is take, take, take. But the longer you're with OVO, the more rewards you get. OVO, do energy differently. Beyond customers only, eligibility required, redemption limits apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cybersecurity from BT. Security solutions built for businesses.
We've all heard, sadly, of inflation. Have you heard of shrinkflation? Work done by Which, and you'll hear from a representative in a moment, has highlighted shrinkflation piling pressure on household budgets. Here's some examples that Which has discovered. Gaviscon heartburn and indigestion liquid, and I hope you get better soon. Size shrunk from 600 mil to 500 mil, but at Sainsbury's the price stayed at £14. That's a 20% rise. Aquafresh Complete Care original toothpaste up from £1.30 for 100 mil to £2 for 75 mil. That really is a con, isn't it? £1.30 gets you 100 mil. £2 gets you 75 mil. Tesco and Sainsbury's are in the firing line for that. Staying with the latter of those two, it's Scottish oats have shrunk from 1 kilo to 500 grams, but the price has increased from £1.25 to £2.10. That's outrageous. Which points out that's a 236% pay rise. I know you all like your oats, but my goodness me. And lastly, Nescafe Original Instant Coffee shrank from 200 grams to 190 at Tesco, Morrison's and Asda, but stayed the price, rise of 5%. OK, enough. Let's talk to Rob Lilly-Jones, who's with Which. They conducted the report. How do these stores think they can get away with it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I mean, as you said there, the examples that you've just given and that we you know, managed to find as part of this report really are shocking. And I think when we talk to the supermarkets, when we talk to the supermarkets, it is often the same reasons, the same excuses that come up time and time again. you know, you'll have heard them for many years now. It's supply chain issues during the pandemic. It's Russia's invasion of Ukraine impacting energy costs, which are then being passed on from the manufacturers to the retailers and then to us. And there's a few things at play here. It's not just that. And also, you know, we've talked about shrinkflation there. But we've also got skimpflation going on as well.
Slow down. What the hell is skimpflation, Rob Lilly Jones?
I thought you'd like that word, Nick. So, yeah, so skimpflation is where the price of a product is staying the same, but the quality of the ingredients is getting worse. So, for example...
Go on.
So this came out, I think, in the news last week. Penguin bars, yeah, everybody loves a penguin chocolate bar. You know, we've been
pick up a penguin, indeed.
The very same.
What's happened to the price?
Well, the price is the same. Well, the product is the problem because the amount of
Problem. If I may pick you up on that.
Well, the amount of chocolate in the penguin bar itself has gone down to the point at which they can legally no longer be called chocolate bars, Nick.
When did this happen?
So this happened in the last week or so. So this is something that
penguin
is...
penguin lovers are up in arms, aren't they, Rob? Aren't they marching on the streets?
Well, maybe, Nick. Maybe they will be. But, I mean, this is... This again is just, you know, part of a wider problem. As we've said, we've got all of these words that I know you love: shrinkflation, skimpflation. It's all coming together at the same point in time, and the people that suffer are, of course, us, the consumers.
Do you reckon everyone's at it in some way, shape, or form, Rob?
Good question, Nick. I mean, obviously, we've only looked at sort of food in this report. I think looking at some of the stuff that we've been doing elsewhere here at Which, I think, yes, I think it's very reasonable to say that it's happening in all aspects of life, you know, whether it is food, drink, or other consumables, or even, you know, the types of products that we'll be buying, you know, maybe toys and that kind of thing for Christmas gifts, that kind of thing. And Black Friday, of course, is around the corner. So I'm sure we'll see more and more examples over the next few weeks.
Lastly, when Which calls out some of these manufacturers or suppliers or supermarkets, what is the reaction? Do they just bury their head in the sand? Do they immediately rush out and say, hang on, we better bring the price of our Kit Kats down or our Scottish oats or what it might be? What happens, Rob, typically?
Yeah, I mean, typically they will come back fairly immediately and say, yes, you know, we'll take this on board, we'll have a look at the prices and maybe we can make some changes. But then often the actions don't reflect what they tell us. So what we would like to see here is the supermarkets are more transparent with what's happening, because I think what's the biggest issue here, well, other than obviously the products staying the price they are or getting more expensive, is that actually some of these prices or some of these changes in the products are being sneaked through. You wouldn't necessarily know that these things are happening if you just looked at the packaging. So we want them to be more transparent about what it is that they're doing.
Rob Lilly Jones is a spokesperson for Which. They conducted the report. Thanks for your input. You're already getting involved in this. John Carroll, Tetley tea bags, a box of 70 instead of 80. Chris, packs of Aldi bananas, is it Aldi bananas? There used to be 8 or 9 in a bunch, now they're down to 5. Each month I go in, there seems to be one less. When does a bunch cease to be a bunch? That's one of those, it's like almost philosophical questions, isn't it? A lot of examples come in. There's a couple of others I just want to quickly get in here. This comes in from, here we go, every week, have you given me your name? Yes, Steve. Every week I buy my grandchildren a Cadbury's chocolate bar. I used to buy them in a pack of 5 for £1.25. Then they reduce it to 4 for £1.40. But the promo material advertised it like it was a new product when it was less for more money. I'm not now buying Cadbury's as I think they've lost their way as a business. All right, we're going to take more calls on that in a moment. But we talked about this report that says, which is a horrible thought, that if you were to see a child fall off, particularly his or possibly her bicycle, and you're an adult male, you might not go and help because you're concerned that you could be labelled a sexual predator. Mick's in Bromley. Mick, what's happened to you? What did you say, child, in some form of distress? Good morning.
Yeah, I got my grandson up Beckenham Park and on a Sunday, and
I know Beckenham Park. It's lovely up there. It's a really big park. It's fun.
Yeah, do you know the cycle track there?
Yes.
Where there's big humps and
yes,
all that?
Yes, I do. It's great fun.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm there, and there's people come and go, and there was this little boy. My grandson's 9. There's this boy there about 8. Well, he took a real tumble. He had no long sleeve shirt on, so he's cut all his arm. He's done his knee. Anyway, I just went over and picked him up and got tissues, washed him all down. I said, "Well, where's your parents?"
Mm.
So he said, "Oh, my dad's gone off for a ride with my little brother." I ended up getting him on his bike. I said, come and go and look for your dad. So I found his dad, and I said, look, he's had a little accident, and I hope you don't mind, but I've cleaned him up.
Mm.
And all that, he said, oh, thanks a lot, mate. He said, not a lot of people will go near a kid, you know. I said, but listen, mate, the thing is, there's a few bad people out there, but 99% of the people are
That's
nice.
Right.
He said, you're right, mate.
That's right.
But you know what? This ain't been going on now. This has been last 20 years.
Was there a moment, you saw the lad take a tumble, was there a moment you thought, oh, God, this could go really wrong? Or did you just think, no, this kid's in real trouble. I'm going to dive in and help the boy?
No, not at all. Straight in. But my mate, who I go walking a dog with at night, he says to me, you'll get yourself in trouble, keep helping people.
Oh, isn't that awful?
And well, I was at the other morning, and there was a woman in the Tesco's little shop, one of them little ones,
the Tesco
7
Express,
o'clock in the morning, she had two walking sticks doing her shopping, and she's nowhere near the bus stop. The bus stop's about 300 yards away. So I said, have you got to go far, love? She said, oh, I've got to go and get the bus, I'm going to work. So I said, look, I'm parked outside. Do you want a lift? So she said, well, that'd be most kind of you. So I said, well, where do you work? So I live in Bromley. She said, oh, Bromley Court.
Right.
So I just ran her to work. Oh. And she said, in all the years I've been disabled, she says, no one's ever offered me a lift.
You're a good bloke. If I come off my bicycle, I want you to be in the vicinity, Mick, and you can help me out. Mick, look after yourself. Thank you. Should we talk skimpflation? I must admit I'm learning about this. Mel says, Asda essential sausage rolls, 50 frozen was £1.35, now 25 and they're a pound a bag. I can't do the sums, but that's quite a hit. Nick's in Colnbrook on this. Nick, what's the story you want to tell me? Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Ever since I noticed that value packs in some of the big stores where they would do a twin pack of digestive biscuits, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd actually find they were actually charging you more for a twin pack than they were for buying two singles. Ever since then, and I raised hell with the manager of Tesco's at the time when they did that with me.
When you say you raised hell, I mean, take me through the conversation. So I'm the manager. Okay, I'll play the role of the manager. Hello, sir. I understand you've got a problem with my digestive biscuits.
Yep. Would you like to come over to the shelf?
Yes, of course.
Where you're
yes.
selling these biscuits.
Yes, sir.
And I actually took it and picked up the two items separately and pointed out to him, why are you charging me more for what you're calling a value pack compared to two single ones, which will actually cost me less if I buy them separately?
Well, this comes from head office in Welling Garden City, sir. There's not a lot I can really do about it.
I can only go as far as I did, but I said, for that reason, I won't be buying any of those items from you in the future, and I now go shopping a lot online because sometimes I find that if I buy, say, 10 or 15 of something or a bulk pack of something, I can find actually, if I do the maths, it can actually work out cheaper.
Do you know what I'd have done? Nick, I'm acutely embarrassed by head office here. Can I please give you a packet of digestive biscuits on me? Would that in some way make it? No, I would have done, and I'd have just given you a packet of biscuits. And then I'd have sent a note.
That's called trying to buy me off, and that won't work because it means...
I'm not trying to buy you off, sir. I'm not trying to bribe you. I'm just showing you that we value our customers here, and I wonder if you'd like a packet of digestive biscuits on me.
No, because you're going to be robbing everybody else that's coming into your store today, and you're going to think that I'm going to keep quiet about it. In fact, you've allowed me to actually broadcast it today. Thank you very much.
I don't think I'm destined to be a very good supermarket manager. I'll probably try and cling on to life on the radio. What else have you noticed, Nick, apart from biscuits? Another product before I move on.
Drinking chocolate. I decided to buy a 1 kilo pack of that instead, and it worked out, instead of buying the two normal pots that I would get, which would cost me, I think, something like £7 each, these worked out at costing me £15 for a kilo of the stuff instead of, I think, 350 grams each.
Well done, Nick. Look after yourself. Now, as Nick is minding the pennies, the COVID inquiry is spending £192 million at the rate of £160,000 a day. There's no cash watching going on there, is there? Neil's in Clifford, which is in Yorkshire. Which city is Clifford near, Neil? Good morning.
It's between... Hi, Nick. It's between Leeds and York.
Oh, I know where you are now. OK. What do you make of this COVID inquiry? 192 and still going. Million quid.
Yes, a huge, prolonged, protracted waste of money. And the irony is, in my opinion, Nick, that the horrible irony is that young people who were at vanishingly small risk from COVID, they're the ones who are going to pick up the tab. Because when you add the bill for this inquiry to the bill for the lockdowns, the track and trace, the furlough, the literally billions of pounds that this country plunged itself into debt, it's those young people who were at no risk from COVID are going to be paying the bills for years to come.
So does that make it even more ridiculous that we're going to be robbing them of hundreds of millions of pounds, which, of course, again, is going to have to be paid for over the years to come?
Yes. My simple point is that, you know, the young people who were at no risk are going to be paying this huge bill for years to come.
Neil, thank you for your input on that. We're going to talk more about shrinkflation, the products you've noted, and, of course, this COVID inquiry, the lunacy, the farce. £192 million. It's 9:45, LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
Hurricane Melissa is expected to bring life-threatening conditions to Jamaica this morning. A defence minister's told Nick that further MOD sites are being identified to replace asylum hotels. The NHS in England is to trial new technology to give prostate cancer diagnoses within a day. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells for many, but showers in Scotland, Northern Ireland and parts of Northern England. A high of 14 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M1 northbound to Junction 11A at Dunstable after that accident that happened earlier. All the lanes have been open for a while, but it's still very slow. Lots of problems on the M25. Firstly, anti-clockwise, it's slow at Junction 29 at the A127. Clockwise, it's busy at 27 at the M11. And anti-clockwise, it's very busy to Junction 16 at the M40. And this is all after accidents, but all the lanes are open at all of those places. Now, also, there are delays on the North Circular Road heading northbound to the A12. That's because a car has broken down. And on the underground, still no Waterloo and City Line. That remains suspended. And no London Northwestern services between Watford Junction and St Albans Abbey.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
It looked to me like a bit of a flyer at the weekend, but the dread words mansion tax have sent a chill through, well, who exactly and why?
James O'Brien on LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
Up to 9.13% annual return. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Visit cufflink.com. That's K-U-F-L-I-N-K. Register your interest today. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to IF ISAs and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Switching to Vodafone full fibre broadband is now as easy as pie. Ooh, freshly baked. It's a walk in the park. Hello, little fella. It's like taking candy from a baby. Come on, as if I'd do that. With One Touch Switch, it's easy. We sort everything out for you. We even contact your current provider. Plus, we'll help towards leaving fees. Switch today to full fibre broadband with Vodafone.
Up to £200 credit to cover leaving fees. More information and terms at vodafone.co.uk/broadband.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £54 million.
It'll have you dancing like nobody's watching. Yeah, baby. Just make sure nobody is watching. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of. Where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts. And where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters. On your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Trains are three bridges for two adults, one skeleton and one fairy werewolf, as you do.
Just one pump cage, kids! Charlie, not that one, mate. It's nearly as big as you.
Back on the train with two little monsters and a couple of pumpkins. Now off home to spend a good 3 hours carving. Download the Thameslink Railway app to book kids' tickets for £2 on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With cyber security from BT. Protecting businesses of all sizes against cyber threats.
Be assured, they always listen, whether it's politicians or other organisations. In this case, it's the COVID inquiry, because they've contacted the team on a couple of occasions demanding I read a statement. Well, I'd like to point out, we asked for a representative last night to come on and discuss the soaring costs, not for a statement. We'd love to have someone on. We've got about 8 and a bit minutes, and the minute you come through, you'll come straight on the show. So we asked for a representative, not a statement. So we won't be reading a statement, but we're open to a representative. And I hope we hear from it. So be aware, these organisations, these politicians, they do listen. Stanley's in Barnet. Let's talk about the soaring cost of the COVID inquiry, £160,000 a day. What do you say to it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I heard of the sum of 59 million solicitors' costs.
Yes, that's the breakdown. Let me get that breakdown again. Go ahead, sir.
And I think, who appointed which firms of solicitors?
Oh, I can't answer that. I don't know, sir. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm wondering about that. And are these solicitors responsible for getting any response?
What is the point? Because obviously I can't answer this. So what is the point you're driving at, do you think, then, Stanley? What is happening here?
I don't think the government has taken a view that they should try and keep the costs down.
No.
They're solicitors and solicitors. And they've probably appointed the most expensive solicitors in the country.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know either, but
As you've been speaking, we've also got 51.4 million funding for core participants. So that's almost the same amount has gone for, quotes, core participants.
Yeah, well, I think the government has just gone crazy spending our money. And it goes back to the first days of COVID when they were trying to buy equipment to buy gowns and medicines, yep, and God knows what,
yep,
without any control. And when we were looking for people to produce equipment or gowns or whatever it was, they appointed the most stupid people. One of the people parents they contacted was Burberry, for God's sake.
Right.
No, they don't have factories. They never approach people who could have helped buying the correct equipment.
Thank you for all your input, Stanley. Caroline, perhaps Baroness Moon could pay for this COVID inquiry. Mark Warren asks, so hopefully what they learn at the COVID inquiry will help when we have another pandemic, but somehow I doubt it. All the inquiries this country's had, do we take any notice of them and put their findings into fruition? Probably not. So as they are spend over at the COVID inquiry, it's shrinkflation and skimpflation for the rest of us. Catherine's in Wandsworth. Catherine, what you're going to tell me? Good morning.
Well, it's a real shame because I've got a few kids and I know obviously people with other kids, and certain supermarkets used to do a fantastic deal on meat, which was like 3 packs for £10.
Three packs of burgers or something? What sort of?
No, like three packs of mince or some chicken breast.
Oh, right, okay.
And some pork chops, which would be great. That's three dinners, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's fabulous. And you'd roughly have about 500 grams or 750 grams, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
It's now gone down to three packs for £12 to £15.
Right.
And the grams are now under 400. So just under 400 grams.
Official figures show that food inflation has risen by 38% over 5 years.
I can absolutely believe it.
Do you reckon, roughly, your shopping was roughly a little under half what it is now, cost-wise?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I've got a teenage boy and two girls.
Yeah.
And my teenage boys are and me and my other half.
Right.
And I could do a week's shopping, and we could probably do it for about £100-110.
Okay.
Well, because obviously the boy eats.
Yeah, teenage boys, I know. Yeah, I've had two when I was one myself.
Also, so we went shopping the other day, just me and the other half, and it was £182.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was one of the cheapest supermarkets out there as well.
But is your boy eating more? You know, as they get older, they're going to eat more,
I mean,
we have to be fair there,
Block of cheese the other day was bought, came down the next morning and half of it had gone. And he said, I just felt hungry. I made myself a grilled cheese sandwich. I was like, how many? But the fact of the matter is, though, it's just becoming unaffordable. Like, we're even thinking about, like, right, what do we do for Christmas? And trying to find the deals now for Christmas and putting them in the freezer, or going, right, okay, should we not have so many people?
Lastly, do you try and do your shopping across the year, or at least across the last few months before Christmas, try and spread it across?
Yes, I am now. I used to be one of these awful people who used to leave it to the last moment, but I can't afford to do that now, and I'm trying to find, like, the little bargains here, there and everywhere, so...
Good luck with it. Regards to the children, lock up the cheese. That's the answer. Or hide the cheese. I don't know how you can hide cheese because it has to be in the fridge. But you'll find a way. Catherine, thank you. Good luck. Darren, now you're in the business, Darren. What do you, in Sudbury, what do you do for a living? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I'm an independent greengrocer based in Sudbury in Suffolk.
How's business?
Yeah, it's tough out there at the minute, Nick. It is tough going. You know, we're being smashed by the supermarkets all the time. I think the consumer needs to wake up to try and get back to using the independents. We are independent. There's independent butchers, bakers in the town where we live. And hopefully, you know, we just need people to come back to us, get out of the stores, because they'll get miles better value for money.
Here's the problem.
It's been going on for a few years, all these 49p packs and all that. Yeah.
Here's the problem. I love you, but parking in the part of England in which I live is a nightmare for me to go to my village greengrocer or the butcher. Is that not half the problem for you and your colleagues in Sudbury, Darren, or do you have massive car parks everywhere?
No, we have car parks that have got limited charges on them, but like you say, you can park in a store for nothing. But that goes back, you know, it's like everything, it all goes back to a government level and a local county level. They've introduced parking in Sudbury where we lived in the last 12 months, which they never used to do before. People used to come here and park for free.
Right.
So obviously, but I just think if you can get to your local independent, your local greengrocer, your local butcher, baker, candlestick maker, you'll get miles better bang for your buck.
But you will your Brussels sprouts be cheaper than Asda or Tesco's Brussels sprouts?
One thing's for sure, Nick, there'll be better quality because right. they do stuff in so much volume. I've done a Facebook post on one of our retail sites the other day, and our broccoli's got ice in it. When was the last time you see a box of broccoli in a supermarket with ice in it? So that tells you how fresh it is. Because
right.
I bought it from the wholesale market, I've took it back to one of our retail sites, and it's still got ice in the box.
Right.
You know, do they beat us on some lines? Definitely. Do they beat us on most lines? No way.
Yeah, lastly, the trouble is when people haven't got much money in their pocket, they're probably going to go for the cheaper option rather than the better quality option because they just need the Brussels sprouts or whatever it might be, the potatoes, the King Edwards or the plums.
I think if you shop with a regular independent every week, you'll get miles better value for money than what you will in the stores, like your lady was just saying. All independents run a special every week and it will knock the supermarkets into a cocked hat quality-wise and price-wise.
Do you want to mention your store, Darren? It's up to you.
Yeah, I'm known as Coxie the Veggie. We have a farm shop called Coxie's at Spencer's Farm Shop. And we also have a home delivery arm called Coxie's Boxes. So we're at it in every area, Nick.
You should sell socks as well. Coxie's Socks.
Well, if we could, we would, Nick. If it was a penny, Nick, we'd try. But that's how desperate things have come, Nick, that we have to spread ourselves so thin now to try and make it pay.
Good luck with it, Darren. Thank you. 1 minute to another... Oh, Darren the second. Darren in Orpington, you're annoyed by shrinkflation. What annoys you, Darren? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. What annoys me, basically, is like being dumbed down. If the prices have gone up, I'll pay more for the same product. We know prices go up and you have to pay more. So don't take five out of my pack of five and I make it only four. I'll pay for five.
Yeah.
Like, prices do go up, we've got to pay more. And please don't dumb down or make the quality less.
Conscious are you when you're going round the supermarket, to use Neil's example of putting two packs of digestive biscuits together or three packets of chicken breasts or whatever, are you very conscious of that? And you'd think, I know you're trying to rip me off with these chocolate bars, I will actually pay the right price because that's what I want.
Yeah, exactly. Example, I was in Marks and Spencer's last night buying some prawns. Lovely prawns. I've noticed that the pack, I don't even know what size it is, but the amount of prawns in there have definitely come down. I bought two packs.
That's what everybody does. Darren, you got in exactly a minute. Thank you. You had the last voice of the day. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinion and put your news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. I'm done. James O'Brien's with a massive cut of newspaper clippings in front of him. James O'Brien's coming up the other side of the news. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 7. He's never read them all. Meanwhile, stay safe.
Slim pickings today, but we have found some areas of interest, not least this mansion tax. It used to be, in fact, it probably still is. Estate agents, journalists and politicians used to slug it out to be the least trusted and most hated professions in the country. And they've come together today like the sort of three musketeers to warn about mansion tax. Journalists are quoting estate agents, trusting them for the time being, to attack politicians over Labour's, I don't think it's going to happen, but the housing minister has refused to rule it out because they have to refuse to rule out everything in the run-up to a budget. A levy on any properties worth over £2 million. I'd love to know what you think about this.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, a Royal Navy patrol vessel is in the Caribbean to support the response to Hurricane Melissa. The Category 5 storm is due to make landfall in Jamaica this morning and could bring catastrophic flooding and landslides. Three people have already died. Dr. Simon Boxall is an oceanographer at the University of Southampton.
You've got this combination of unbelievably strong winds. Can you imagine going down the motorway in a supercar and then putting your head out the window? And then having a metre of water dumped on you, it's going to cause devastation.
Military barracks in Inverness and East Sussex are to be used to house hundreds of asylum seekers. The use of migrant hotels was branded failed, chaotic and expensive in a report published yesterday. LBC's Fraser Knight has more.
The government had promised to end the use of hotels to house asylum seekers by 2029, but reports this morning suggest that privately, Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, has tasked the Home Office with actually ending their use within a year. And so we're back to this idea of expanding the use of military sites and porta cabins, with the Times newspaper saying that two of them will be ready to move hundreds of men into by the end of next month.
A man has been charged with the murder of a pensioner who died the day after his house was burgled. John Burke, who was 86, was assaulted during the break-in in Hackney in East London at the end of last month. 39-year-old Ashley Malcolm is due to appear in court this morning. Men with suspected prostate cancer will be able to get a diagnosis within a day as part of an NHS trial in England. Artificial intelligence will be used to read MRI scans, which will then be checked by a specialist. Health officials say it's a potential game-changer. And Brendan Rodgers has resigned as Celtic manager with immediate effect. A major shareholder had criticised Rodgers' recent comments about the strength of the squad. Former boss Martin O'Neill will take charge temporarily. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 96.57. That is up 4. The pound buys $1.33 and the euro 14. LBC weather, mostly dry with sunny spells, but showers in Scotland, Northern Ireland and parts of Northern England. A high of 14 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
How would you describe McCain vibes?
I would reckon it's like a crisp and a chip. If they had a baby, do you know what I mean? Well, you know what?
A chip and a crisp.
Combination.
It's got crisp ancestry, but it's a chip.
Like a hot chip crisp combo thingy? Yeah? Pure poetry, that was.
McCain vibes. Our chip crisp combo hot snack thingies. In a freezer aisle near you.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 10 is the time. A very good morning to you. We've done it again, haven't we? It's so unsatisfying. It was Cassandra, wasn't it, in Greek mythology, who was cursed to be correct with her prophecies but never believed. And being proved right has, since 2016, never felt so unsatisfying. But I told you yesterday, and I must confess I've been a little bit surprised by some of the people in my profession who fell headlong into this trap. If someone says something racist, especially on the telly, you don't have a debate about whether or not it's racist. Even ITV last night is finding itself asking questions about whether this racism is actually racism or realism. And I told you it was going to happen, and I derive no pleasure whatsoever of them been proved right, but given that we spend a couple of minutes catching up with each other every morning, I thought I'd just record the fact that I was very disappointed and dismayed to see some of the people wading headlong into precisely... I mean, you read a Richard Littlejohn column in the Daily Mail, you know what you're going to get, but you turn on previously or often decent broadcasting and find a debate about whether racism is actually racism, and your heart sinks a little further as the Overton window shifts a little more rightward. But we're not going to start with that today. I don't know if you've noticed this. It's a bit cocky of me to think that you might have done, to be honest. Well, I don't know how much attention you pay to my burblings every morning. You might just have me on to keep the cat company, or to keep you awake, or possibly to help you fall asleep. But I don't know. There's two types of listener, isn't there? There's the background noise, and then there's the hanging on your every word. And I suppose most of us oscillate between both of those poles and end up somewhere in between. I probably concentrate a little more on what I'm saying than you do, but not always. And there have certainly been occasions where you've pointed out that I've got the time wrong, the day wrong, the story wrong, the facts wrong, everything wrong. But generally speaking, I suspect that the team upstairs, the management team, would expect me to be paying a little bit more attention than you do to what goes on between 10 and 1 on LBC. And I have noticed in recent months, I have noticed that I'm getting interested in something I was never that interested in before. It's very strange. I'm not bad at maths. I pretend I'm bad at maths because I'm not as good at maths as I am at other stuff. But I'm like B grade, B to B plus at maths. And I have a grasp of economics, although I didn't major in it. I went to the London School of Economics, but I didn't do an economics degree, technically speaking, although I've got the letters Econ in brackets after the BSc that I have never actually attached to my name. But I've never, and I probably shouldn't admit this to you, but I suspect you may have noticed, on days when matters fiscal fall into my lap on the programme, I never get stuck into it. Budget day, which is, of course, just around the corner, has always left me curiously befuddled. If it's a Tory government, I normally come out of budget day better off than I went into it. Not always, but normally I come off better off than I went into it. Certainly in the context of income tax, until very, very recently, until Rishi Sunak, I think, I'd be better off than I was before. And I sit here feeling a little bit left out when the entire UK media starts sifting through the fine detail. Occasionally, they come up with a little nugget that I can enjoy, like the pasty tax. Do you remember when George Osborne put a tax on pasties? Oh, that was fun. And I still go to the pub just about often enough to notice the price of beer, although in the southeast now you need to sell a kidney to buy a round in many, many pubs. I never really smoked cigarettes, so I didn't really get engaged in the fags up, beer down kind of coverage of the budget. And then I need to get the right word so that you don't think less of me. This isn't complacency. It's not because I'm insulated from financial reality. Even when I've been on my uppers over the years, or been a lot less comfortable than we are now, I have not engaged in it. I've never felt it makes that much difference to me, you know? And I don't know quite what's changing. I don't know quite why this is changing. Is it because of the national conversation being so weird? Everybody knows Rachel Reeves has to raise money. There will probably be spending cuts in the budget as well, but the David Cameron-inspired theology that preached the notion that you could fix an international banking crisis by closing libraries in Wolverhampton has withered on the vine. Reform UK councils elected on a promise to cut spending are discovering that there is no spending left to cut. There is no fat left to trim. You might have a bugbear, you might have a favourite, you think the unemployed people get too much, or kids with ADHD get too much, or whatever it may be, but I'm not going to be rude to you. You're not necessarily an idiot, you're just wrong. You've been led by the nose into these ludicrous positions by people who work in the media, charged with one job and one job only, protecting the interests of wealth. That is what many of us do every single day. God knows how I've managed to wriggle off that particular hook and many mornings swim in precisely the opposite direction. But the reason why people like Mark Zuckerberg control Facebook, Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post, Elon Musk bought Twitter, Rupert Murdoch bought the Times and the Sun, various other sort of plutocrats and oligarchs, up to and including a former KGB officer, have made major investments in UK and US media, is to protect the interests of wealth. And the reason why that reaches your ears with a veneer